Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the premier radio networks, including, I think it's 180 stations by now in the U.S., on Saturday, August 18th, 2012. This is episode 901. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphones from your home or office. Find out what your gadget is worth today at gazelle.com. And by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why I love our new cloud-based phone system from RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use the offer code TWIT. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, and it is time to talk high tech, the Tech Guy Show. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the number. 888, if you want to talk, I mean, you don't have to. You can sit and listen. The show may be consumed passively. However, if you have a question or a comment or a suggestion, you want to ask about some hot new gadget, I'm here for you, baby. I'm here. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. 888-827-5536. We also have our new website, the Tech Guy Labs. They're online. You can go to leo.am. Somebody said, why do you always say techguylabs.com? You could just say leo.am. That's six characters. L-E-O.am. Yeah, well, that's true. That's the shortcut. Leo.am. Take you to techguylabs.com. And that's where you'll see notes from all 900 episodes previous. We're on episode 901. You'll see the tip of the week. I got to write one up for this week. I have to write one up this week. Josh Windisch, who is our webmaster, keeps telling me, where's the tip, Leo? And the tip I want to tell you, I'll tell you what, I could do it now and in words. It's so much easier to dictate than it is to write. You know, I've written 13 books about technology, 13 computer books, starting in, I think it was 2001 with the Leo Laporte's Technology Almanac. Did that for 5 or 6 years, I think. And then books on PCs and Macs, on gadgets and all that stuff. 13 books, and it was the most painful, unpleasant process. I finally said, why am I killing myself? I'm not writing any more books. That's it on the books. And it's just so much easier to talk. And then I'll just get Josh or James DeRuvo, who does our show notes transcription, just to write it down. And then that the tip is done. So the tip comes to me or came to me after listening to the horror story we talked about last week about my friend Matt Honan, who is a technology journalist. He writes for Wired.com. He's in the Wired Gadget Lab, who got hacked by two kids, 19-year-old kids. They were doing it for fun. They weren't trying to mess with him particularly, or at least not with him in particular. They liked his Twitter handle, which was @MAT. It was a 3-letter Twitter handle. And they said, we'd love to have that and mess around with it. So they did, you know, it's interesting because he had strong passwords. It wasn't a password attack. They used what we call social engineering to attack him via Amazon and Apple. And they were able to essentially trick Apple into giving them his Apple password. And the rest just boom, 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 like dominoes. But among other things, they got into his Google account. Now, I don't know about you. I use Gmail. And Gmail is where a lot of my stuff ends up. You know, for instance, password reset requests. It's the email of record I use for a lot of my websites, things like that. And that's really dangerous because That's how these kids got into Twitter. They requested a new password. And since they had attacked and successfully got into his Gmail account, they said to Twitter, "Hey, I forgot my password." We've all seen this. Forgot your password? Question mark. "We'll send you an email to the email account on record." So they said, "Hey, you know, I forgot my password. Would you send it to me?" And they sent a new password to his Gmail account. The bad guys got it, and they're in. They got Twitter. So if you use Gmail, one of the most important things you could do, and this is my tip, is to make it stronger. Now, it's a good idea to use strong passwords, but there's an even better thing that you can do. It comes down to something they call two-factor authentication. Password authentication is pretty straightforward. You give them a login name and a password. That's something you know, and presumably you and only you know, and that can't be deduced or deducted or brute-forced attacked by a bad guy. Something you know. But we can make passwords stronger by asking for a second factor, not something more you know. That's the problem with security questions, just says more stuff you know. No, there's three possible factors. Something you know, like a password. Something you have, like your cell phone, for instance, or a physical dongle. You know, when I get into the Tech Guy Labs, there's a physical key, right? That's something you have. So that's a little different from something you know, right? You can't get into the Tech Guy Labs just by knowing the password. You need the key. And then the third thing is something you are, and this is the most sophisticated. This is, and you know, you see this in all the spy movies, you know, the iris scan or the thumbprint recognition. That's something you are, something biometric. So there are three possible, there's probably more, but generally consider there are three relatively easy to use factors for authentication. We almost always just use something you know, a password. But what if you were to add a second one and require both? Wouldn't that make it a lot stronger? So, for instance, if you try to get into the Tech Guy Labs web server in SoftLayer, it's in a specially secured network operations center in Dallas, Texas, you would not only have to know the password, but you would have to do a hand scan. And the measurements of your hand, which apparently are unique, would have to match the password on record. And then they could say with some certainty, well, this has to be Leo. Because his hand is exactly the right shape, size, and so forth, and he knows the password. Something he knows and something he is. Well, there's a form of two-factor authentication that's starting to be used more widely. Perhaps your bank uses it. Gaming sites use it. I use it when I play World of Warcraft on Battle.net. PayPal can use it, and Google and Facebook can use it. And this is what I want you to turn on. It's not something you are. It's not, they don't do iris scans or thumbprint scans. It's something you have. It's an authenticator. So you'll still need your, let's talk about how, for instance, Google does it. You'll still need your Google password to log into Google. But after you give it your password, it'll then say, okay, now I need a 6-digit number. We're going to send it to your cell phone. Your bank might do this. Now this makes it much harder, doesn't it, to crack into that account. If a guy gets your password or can deduce or brute force your password, he still would need to have your phone to get in. He'd need to be or intercept your phone, which is possible. And unfortunately, it's a little easy to do. But the point is, it makes it harder. And he's got to know enough about you to know what your phone number is or to get access to your phone. In other words, it's a significant step up in security. Look, nothing's perfect. In fact, the best thing would be all three, right? You need a password. You need your special dongle or your phone. PayPal has a little dongle you put on our keychain that puts a number on it. I have in my wallet, it's a credit card-shaped dongle or authenticator that it's kind of cool. VeriSign gives these out. And it gives you VeriSign identity protection. And it can be used by other third parties. And this little card, all I have to do is press a button on it, on this credit card I keep in my wallet, and it will generate, in this case, a 5-digit number. Now, the bad guy would have to have this special credit card plus a password to get in. That's good. That's good security. If your bank supports it, turn it on. If you use PayPal, turn it on. Google actually offers an application called the Google Authenticator application. That's what I use on Battle.net and on Google. You don't even need to get a text message. You just have to be running the application. The first time you run it, you'll scan a barcode on the Google site that will say, yes, this is Leo, this is the authenticator he's using. And then it will generate six-digit numbers that are unique that you have to enter in order to get into my Google account or my Battle.net account or my LastPass account. Or I use these for a variety of things. This is great. Now somebody have to know my password and have my phone. Facebook does this too. If you go into your Facebook security settings, it's a little bit of a misleading entry. I'll tell you about it when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Your calls too coming up.
What?
Yeah, right. There's no weight limit. It is the hottest topic in business today. And I have to say, it is what I recommend.
I can't even skate on regular skates.
It's what we did with Google Apps. And I'll tell you, you get everything. You get not just email. You get collaboration tools like instant messaging, calendaring,
well, it's not just
video
the ball,
chat.
It's the clock.
You get, of course, word processing, spreadsheets, presentation. All of it with corporate branding. So it looks like it's your business process right there running on one of the most reliable communication platforms ever. But what about training? What about support? What about migration? And that's where it comes down to Vertical.
Geofencing. Oh, that's
Vertical,
interesting.
A Google premium.
I don't think that's quite as secure, though, is it? But I guess that's what Square kind of, well,
to the cloud. Yeah, Square kind of uses that, right? Because I can't pay with Square unless,
that comes back down to something you have. Something you have.
Today's photo day. Am I now out of focus? Camera one's all right. Two might be a little bit soft.
What are the two most important things in business? Time and money.
Look at two. It seems like it might be a little bit soft. That's what they're saying. Good? Yeah. Could you move that, as long as I've got you, move that chair over so I can see my monitor? Thank you.
Happy Saturday. Happy Saturday. Happy, happy, happy. Updates are ready for your computer.
Oh, I was going to install Windows 8. I want to talk about that, too. I have it right here, Windows 8 Professional.
You print a whole six-page document on the Workforce Pro before the leading laser printer spits out a page. So check it out, the Epson Workforce Pro. Love this printer. Right now, you'll save 10% on the Workforce Pro at Epson.
Whose new camera? $7,500 for the body. I can't. I just spent $1,000 on a coffee machine. I'm now no longer allowed to spend any more money on anything. Oh, but I love my coffee machine. No, Bruce, the grinder. So what happened? Weird thing happened. And I don't know exactly what went wrong. But I ordered. I'll show you what I ordered. So it all starts Thursday night, Tuesday night, and I said, my cheap little espresso maker's gone bad, and I said this on Twitter, what do you recommend I get? Of course, everybody on Twitter has an opinion, from Keurig and Nespresso on up to the $2,000 espresso machine. I said under $1,000. But then Mark, the coffee geek, coffeegeek.com, it was, I would say, probably one of the most respected, well, no, there's lots of them, but I respect him anyway. Coffee guys said, I've tested and I really like this. This is the Breville BES 9000 XL dual boiler espresso maker. And one of the reasons he likes it is, first of all, it's semi-automatic, right? You could do manual, but you could just all press those buttons. But it's a double boiler, which means you can steam and brew at the same time. I mean, this thing, I am in love with this thing. But it was expensive. It was more expensive than I had planned on spending. But he talked me into it, and I said, oh, yeah, okay. Fortunately, I have my nice new $200 burr grinder, my KitchenAid Proline. And he said, oh, well, that's okay. I said, oh, well. What should I? He said, well, you need a Baratza Preciso. So back to Amazon I go, and I order what is misleadingly labeled on Amazon
as a let's see if it's still This is not what it is labeled. So that's a virtuoso. Oh, they've changed it. They've changed it. It's still mislabeled as a 685. It's not. Here we go. Tell it like it really is. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number, 888-827-5536. I want to just complete the two-factor authentication because you certainly should turn it on Google, although it's kind of inconvenient. Google doesn't even call it second factor. They call it two-step. That's a little more accurate because, in fact, the problem with Google is that in order to use Google services with other applications that don't understand two-factor authentication, you end up using Google-generated passwords for those apps. And I think, frankly, that's a bit of a hole. It doesn't matter. It's really inconvenient, but I turn it on anyway. There is, and I should point this out, there is definitely a trade-off between convenience and security. But I think everybody, after this hack, I think everybody got a little scared and realized it's probably better to err on the side of security, right? Especially with those important things like Google Mail. Facebook, too. You don't want anybody impersonating or stealing your Facebook account. Teenagers, this would be especially good for you because a lot of kids are trying to do this. It's turn on second-factor authentication on Facebook. Now, Facebook implements it fairly straightforwardly. It's just they don't label it clearly. So go to your account settings and security. And it's this weird one in the security settings that says login approvals. Now, I don't know how you'd really understand what that is, but what it says, this is really second factor authentication. Approval is required when logging in from an unrecognized device. Turn that on because what that then means is, there's a couple of different ways you could do this. It says, require me to enter a security code. That's that second factor. You'd need your password still and a security code each time I try to access Facebook on a computer or device that I've not used before. So that means it's not going to protect you if you leave your Facebook account open on your laptop and somebody comes over and sits down and puts up a status message. It won't protect you if you accidentally click on a malicious app on Facebook, and goodness knows that happens. But it will protect you against some hacker trying to break into your account somewhere across the world because that hacker is on an unrecognized computer or device and will be asked for the security code. Now, the only way you can get the security code is either as a text message to a phone you've registered with Facebook or use the Facebook app on your smartphone. And they have a code generator in there that does the same thing as the Google Authenticator. I would turn those on. I would turn login approvals on. It's a very minor inconvenience in this case. Once you've approved a device, you never have to do it again. But it sure will slow down a bad guy who's trying to get into your Facebook account. So that's what second factor authentication is. If you see it on your bank offers it, my bank offers it absolutely. They send me a text message every time I want to access my account on any machine. That's great. I want that. PayPal offers it. Battle.net, if you're a World of Warcraft or Diablo gamer, Battle.net offers it. In fact, Battle.net's saying turn it on because we've had password compromises. So turn it on. This is a great feature. So if you see second factor authentication anywhere, understand it's going to take a little extra effort, but once you get used to it, it's not horrible. In most cases, you only do it once per device, but you get so much more security. I wish everybody would do this. Every bank, every account that you really want to protect, they should do this. All right, let's get to the phones. That was my little my plug for security. I have Windows 8. The new version came out. The final version came out, Windows 8. They call it Ready to Manufacture, RTM, which is ironic because I don't think that's in the old days when they had to press a CD so you could buy it. It's ready to manufacture. It's just ready. And I've been playing with it. We'll talk about Windows 8, and I'll show you if you're watching our video, I'll show you what it looks like. The new final release of Windows 8 is out, and we will be getting Windows 8 computers 2 months from now, end of September, maybe October. I guess it's October, isn't it? Okay, 3 months from now. Wait a minute. This is August, September. 2 months from now. I was right the first time. But we'll talk about that later because I've got so many calls on the line here. Let's start with Marge in Los Angeles. Marge, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, thank you for your program.
You're welcome, Marge. Thank you for listening to it.
I'm trying to learn as much as I can. I have two quick questions.
Sure.
I don't like the Yahoo, and I want to switch to another email company, if that's what you call it.
Yep.
And I have a very bad cell phone, and I wondered if you can recommend one for me. I use the Nokia for years, and I liked it. And this one, I cannot make any heads or tails out of it.
All right, let me start with the first, a replacement for Yahoo Mail. What is it that you don't like about Yahoo Mail? Just so I don't recommend something that's worse.
It stopped working for me.
Okay, you know Microsoft has introduced a new. Microsoft has introduced a new free email program that I think is very nice, very clean, and easy to use. I'm not sure if it will solve the problems that you're having, but I would give it a try, and it costs you nothing to try. It's at Outlook.com. It's like Yahoo Mail. It's a web-based. You use your web browser to get the email. Although you can, if you wish, use Microsoft's Outlook to get your email as well. But I think for the web, it's very nice. Outlook.com. Okay? And it's very clean, very easy to use. You just heard me talking about Google Mail, Gmail, and I like it. But I think it's very cluttered and perhaps confusing to people. And Microsoft is very actively trying to do the opposite. They're trying to make it easier. And so I think this is very clean. They have some very nice features. For instance, good junk mail filtering. They have a feature called Sweep, which I love, which you could set up some rules and it will go through your inbox and sweep it clean. I love that. I think they've done a nice job with this. This is called Outlook.com and it is absolutely free. It's really Microsoft's old Hotmail rebranded. This is the future of Hotmail. Then the other question, I take it you don't want a smartphone, because if you find, you know, that's even more confusing. There's a great phone that I had my mom get, and she really liked it. Now, my mom is 80, almost 80. She'll be 80 in January. And she liked this phone, and I like it, and I kind of like the calling plans on it and so forth. It's called the Jitterbug. The Jitterbug. It's $100. It's got nice, big, easy-to-use keys. You can actually go to greatcall.com. They're the people who sell it. They also do the phone service. And at least take a look at it. It is very straightforward. You liked your Nokia probably because it was simple and easy to use. This has big numbers. It's really designed for seniors. It's got big numbers, big, loud speaker. It does have a camera. Battery lasts for days and days. Jitterbug. GreatCall.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So to continue the coffee talk. By the way, we're debating, you're the wrong people to ask, whether to cut this stuff out of the show. Because people were complaining about me eating, and you know the problem with the show is that it's 3 hours and it's right over lunchtime, so I have to eat. So I guess we could cut out the eating. I don't know what to do. We got about 8 complaints about me eating on the microphone. We went back and forth. We had a executive committee meeting on this subject, and my instruction to, I think Josh and Alex edit the show. My instructions to them were, I didn't realize this, but they'd been cutting all the breaks out. And as you can see right now, there's a lot going on in the breaks. So my instructions to them were, well, when it's just, a picture of the studio, and Leo will be right back, and music, you can cut that out. We don't want to waste people's time in the podcast. But if I'm talking about something, let's leave it in. And so we did, and we've been doing that for the last month or so. And we're getting tons of complaints because people are saying, you're chewing in the microphone. So, and I've been trying not to, but I guess one day I really did a lot, and I don't know. So I guess we'll leave it in. I don't know what to do. I don't want to make it too complicated on our editors, because then they, if it's a real big judgment call, then it's tricky. Anyway, going back to the coffee saga. So I ordered, and this is actually more than just my story. This is something that I think people should be aware of. So on Amazon, the way it works is that people can be resellers, but Amazon fulfills. So you see this all the time. I see it all the time. Sold by, in this case, Batch Coffee, fulfilled by Amazon. That means it's going to come from Amazon's depots, but the product is provided to Amazon by Batch Coffee. In this case, and I noticed they tried to fix it, but they didn't. They're selling a Virtuoso coffee maker as the $100 more expensive Preciso. They even have the Preciso model number. So I didn't pay close attention. I just saw there's the model number. I didn't really look at the picture. The old picture, they had mixed pictures, which would have been a giveaway, but they've taken those out. They had two different models. They're still selling the wrong model there, by the way. That's a picture of the old model. And had I read the reviews, I would have seen a number of sent wrong grinder, not the advertised product. Amazon is an accessory to a fraudulent seller. I missed these. This is the 586, not the Preciso. They're selling a more expensive grind. This is the one I got. I opened it up and said, well, that's not what I ordered. So I've talked to the guy at Batch Coffee, Derek. I've talked to Baratza. Nobody could figure out what's going on. Derek says, oh, Amazon's screwing up. But this is mislabeled. Amazon does this listing. So anyway, it's mislabeled. So Baratza I returned it. The good thing about Amazon, they take it back very easily. So I returned it. You get your money back. I said, wrong thing. But I noticed the listing's still wrong, which means people are going to get bit. The thing that bothers me is if you aren't paying close attention, you get this, you open it, fine. You've got a $200 grinder for $300. It's not a bad grinder. It's just that it's not the one you ordered. And some people may never know that because they look very similar. So I talked to Karen at Baratza, which is a U.S. company. It sounds like they're Italians, doesn't it? And she said, oh, my God. And I said, well, who should I get this from? She said, we'll send you one. In fact, she said, because you've done... let's fix this. So they're going to send me. And actually, I said, well, as long as I'm doing this, I'm going to get the Vario, because this is what Coffee Geek said to get, which isn't even. No, that's even. That's a crazy one. But Coffee Geek said, I would rather have a good grinder and a cheap maker than a cheap maker and a cheap grinder and a good make. In other words, you got to get the Vario. Is an amazing thing. So this is the one I'm going to get. I upgraded. Oops. Kyle Benham's playing with me there. You know why he's playing that? Because I got a new coffee maker and I haven't slept in 48 hours. That's why he's saying, wake me up before you. Oh, my goodness. It's true. I'm exhausted. It's an espresso machine, very nice espresso machine. The problem is when you get an espresso machine, especially when you get it like in the evening, you gotta make some. You got to try it, right? So you set it all up. It takes a while to set it all up. Then you got to try it. Then you got to try it again because, the first time it's, well, maybe it's not perfect, so maybe I can improve that. And so literally, I mean, I've been awake for a long, long time. Let's say hello to Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guy. Scott is the host of our fabulous Home Theater Geeks program, which you hear each and every Monday on the TWiT network. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing great. How are you?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. I'm going on vacation next week.
That Woo! Sounds fun. Will we lose you for a little while?
No. Well, next Saturday I won't be here.
Where are you going? Where are you going?
Believe it or not, Palm Springs.
Oh, no, I believe that. That's supposed to be very nice.
It's beautiful, but in the middle of summer, it's not everybody's cup of tea.
A little warm, is it?
Yeah, just a little.
Just a tidge. Well, that's good. I've never been there.
My wife and I really like it.
Are you a golfer?
No, not at all.
Because I think that's why most people go there, to golf, right?
Yeah, it's true. But my wife and I go there in the summer because it forces us to slow down.
Yeah, you can, like a lizard.
Like a lizard, exactly.
I can't move.
Plus, going out at night is really fun.
Yeah, because it's warm.
It's still pretty hot, yeah. But it's still warm, you know. But our favorite Mexican restaurant is there, and our favorite spa is there. Oh, so good. I really need the...
you need a break.
I need a break.
So Scott will be filling in for me, I should mention, in November. I'm going to Australia November 7th through the 21st, and you're going to do a couple of shows in that time.
You bet.
Home theater questions galore for Mr. Wilkinson. Meanwhile, you got something you want to talk about? What do you bring when you travel? You're a home theater guy. I bet you don't bring any home theater gear at all with you.
None whatsoever.
Not even a little portable iPod speaker system or anything?
We do bring a little portable iPod speaker system. All right. Yeah, we like to listen to music.
Yeah.
Sure. But I don't bring any displays.
What do you like for your iPod, your music system?
Oh, I like a variety of things. Jazz.
Not the kind of music. I couldn't care less about the music. What do you play it on? What are you, nuts? Who cares about that?
Who cares about that?
It ain't the music. It's the gear.
Yeah, well, you're right. And after all, I am the home theater geek.
Yeah.
So. duh. Okay, no. I typically bring a Zvox. I have a Zvox. It's a one-box thing that has stereo, and it has a little phase control so that it spreads out the stereo sound field.
Oh, I'm not familiar with this. This sounds interesting.
Yeah, I forget the model number of it. It's a smaller one.
Yeah.
it did actually come with a very unfortunate name. They called it the Porta Party.
Well, you'll never forget it. Let's put it that way.
No, it's true. The Porta Party.
Porta Party by Zvox.
But it really sounds very good. It's got a good bass response, good stereo separation. It's one box. It's a little big. It's not tiny, but I've tried a bunch of these little tiny iPod docks, and they're just not very good. Actually, to tell you the truth, this time around, I'm probably going to take the B&W Zeppelin Mini, which is a really
high-end. That's a beautiful speaker system.
Yeah, yeah. That's what we call serious iPod dock. It's beautiful. It's got a dock on the top. You just stick the iPod on there. And
not inexpensive.
No, I forget how much it was. I got it some time ago. A few $100.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not cheap, but boy, does it sound good.
Yeah, and it's cool looking. It's maybe not so easy to pack.
No, but since we're driving.
Uh-huh. Just throw that in the back.
It's just throw it in the back. Yeah, it's really
now,
not.
They have that two. Big. They have one that you dock, and then they have the Zeppelin Air, which actually is kind of cool because it plays via the Wi-Fi. You'd have to be using AirPlay, but you'd have to be on a Wi-Fi network. So that's probably not so good for travel, but great for home.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I've looked at the main Zeppelin, which is the one you're showing, if those of you who can see the picture. It looks like a Zeppelin. It looks like a dirigible.
Yeah. It's about, what, a foot and a half, 2 feet wide? It's big.
Yeah. It's big. It's big. Now, there's also the Zeppelin Mini, which is quite a bit smaller. And that's the one that I have.
B&W makes very good speakers. I mean, like super good high-end studio speakers. So I would presume.
Super good.
Yeah. The Mini looks like a little a cylinder.
Yeah.
And you like that, huh? Well,
yeah. Oh, it sounds fantastic.
I'm not familiar with this one. All right.
Really amazing.
There's a good tip for people who... I bring... I have that little... who makes it? Little rubber... Bluetooth speaker.
Super Bluetooth speaker.
Yeah. The chat room will know because I've reviewed it several times on here. It's a company that makes Bluetooth headsets, but they decided to make the Bluetooth jam box. That's it. The little box speaker. And it's nice because it's battery powered. And I brought that on. I'm going to bring it on the cruise when I'm gone to Australia in November because.
Oh yeah.
Not so much. It's good audio. Not great. It's a little pricey. It's $179. But what's great about it is you can have it playing off your iPhone or your other device and just walk around with it. So as I'm getting ready, I'll bring it to the bathroom and I'll listen to it while I'm shaving. I'll bring it back into the cabin. I can bring it out.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So I like that. And battery life goes a long time, and the sound quality is pretty good. It's from Jawbone. It's called the Jawbone Jambox.
The same company that makes the little Bluetooth earpieces for your cell phone?
Yeah. Yeah, this is pretty. This has been a hot product. They also make the new Big Jam box, which is $100 more, and I think it's a little too big. I like the compactness of the job. Of the
well, if you want to carry it around different places, yeah. Certainly the B&W, that's not going to be very easy.
No, you wouldn't want to do that. Yeah.
No. Even the Zvox that I've used before, same thing.
Caffeine Free Dave says, I just don't have the ears for high quality audio, so I shouldn't listen to my recommendations. So we have a few more minutes. You want to answer a question?
Well, actually, I was going to tell you about my new my experience. I was with Dish Network for years on satellite TV. I just switched over to DirecTV, and I was going to give you a quick little summary of the differences between them.
Ah, yes, because I think a lot of people are curious about that.
Exactly right. And I was, too. And I got DirecTV because they were showing the Olympics in 3D, and I really wanted to see the Olympics in 3D. But other than that, I want to let you know that in almost every way, DirecTV is, I prefer it over Dish, particularly the user interface. It's got a somewhat TiVo-like user interface, which isn't surprising because DirecTV and TiVo have had an on-again, off-again relationship. It's currently on again. You can get a TiVo-based DirecTV box, but that won't do the whole house DVR thing. So I got the whole house DVR thing. But one of the coolest things about TiVo and the other DirecTV box is that when you fast forward through the commercials and then you hit play, it backs up based upon human response time.
Oh.
So you're watching, it's very cool. You're watching the commercials flash by, and then all of a sudden you see the program and you go, oh, there's the program, and you hit play. Dish just starts right there, and you have to then go, oh, I got to back up to catch the beginning of the segment.
Did you ever get to use the Dish Hopper technology? This is the technology they're being sued by the networks because it makes it so easy to skip commercials.
Yeah. No, I haven't tried that yet.
Yeah, that's designed specifically to skip commercials.
Exactly.
Scott Wilkinson, twit.tv/HTG for the home theater geeks. Hang on, I want to find out who you got on Monday. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And I'll let you finish the review. So I think you had more to say than just better commercial skipping.
Yeah, it's the picture quality that I want to talk about.
Yeah, that's the more important thing. You know, I do have to say that given the fights that are going on now with the cable companies and the networks and Dish,
mm-hmm.
just I wonder, you know, what the future is.
What the future
is. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Mom brought her Aereo, and we played with that. That works really well. You know what? About Aereo?
No, what's that?
I should talk about it on the air. Barry Diller started the company, and he also got sued. It's only available right now in New York City. That's why it was really nice of her to bring it, because I can't actually use it here. So she logged into her account. The idea is really goofy. They have literally physical antennas, one per customer. Actually, I think several per customer in New York City that receive broadcast and then put it on the internet. So you can watch on your iPad your broadcast signals and even DVR them, record them on your iPad via your personal antenna. And now the original lawsuits say, hey, this is cable, you can't do this. And they point out, no, we're merely renting antennas. And they won.
Wow.
So he plans to roll this out nationwide. These antennas are tiny.
It's only in New York right now?
It's only in New York City right now. And it's really a very interesting idea. And I was impressed.
Wow.
The quality was very good. Of course, it's dependent on your internet access.
Right.
So.
Wow, I've got to check that out.
A-E-R-E-O, Aereo.
.com.
And, you know, it's interesting. I can see why the networks are peeved because they don't say, or the TV channels are peeved because they don't say WCBS, WNBC. They just say CBS, NBC. But it's perfect for a cord cutter because it essentially is going to give you what you're missing when you cord cut, which is the local live stuff.
Right.
And it's not, let me see how
expensive. Well, actually, when you cut the cord, you can get local stuff over the air just with a regular rooftop
antenna.
Yeah,
but not on your iPad, not on.
True.
This is internet connection. So $80 a year if you prepare for the year. Or you can get day passes, you can get monthly. where you get 20 hours of storage space.
Wow.
It's actually, I think $80 a year is the one to get, and that gives you all the features. 40 hours of storage space a month. Or no, total, I guess. Pretty good deal.
Well, I'm going to look into that.
It's making the networks and the making everybody crazy. Crazy. It's great. Anyway, Dr. Mom, there's a free one-month trial, and so that's what Dr. Mom's using.
Oh, that's cool. Sandard in the chat room is asking about my clock over my shoulder. It's called the Tix clock. It's not a binary clock. It just shows you the number of hours and minutes.
Well, it looks like a binary clock. That looks like what Chris Perillo has.
It kind of is, but it's really not. You count the number of green, blue, and red dots. So that right now says must say 11:44.
How can you even tell? So the green is tens.
The green is tens. Yeah. Tens. The first red is the is oh no, no I'm sorry.
The red is tens. Red is
tens.
So 0,
the
1,
green
or
is
2.
Ones.
Right. Ones. So it's 11:40. I get it. That's cool. Yeah, that makes sense. And it's just moving around to make it pretty.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I actually also have a real true binary clock that isn't in here. It's in my home theater.
Yeah, that's different. That's different. Yeah.
Yeah.
So here we go.
All right, Carbonite your library, Leo.
Got it.
You've been missing. Live young. You're like a butterfly. Trying its wings.
I don't get it. What is it? Scott Wilkinson better explain Kyle Benham's musical sense of humor to me. Scott Wilkinson, our home theater geek. What is it? You get it? Do you recognize it?
Sure, it's a song about Palm Springs.
Oh, well, there you go. Palm Springs.
I'm going for vacation.
That's where you're going. Home theater geek Scott Wilkinson, he does a weekly show on my Twit network, which is an internet television network, at twit.tv. He's on 1 o'clock on Mondays, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time. And because it's on the internet, it's global. So I always give out the kind of the Greenwich Mean Time as well, which
is a
great 2000 UTC.
Good to know.
Yeah, you can watch it. It's 8 p.m. UTC. And then I guess you just have to figure that out to your local time zone.
Exactly.
And who is going to be on this week?
This week we actually pre-recorded yesterday because, after all, I'm going on vacation.
Oh.
And it's actually part two of a fascinating discussion with a guy named Gene Dolgoff, who you know. He was the inventor of the LCD projector.
Yeah.
And he's big into 3D these days. But what we talked about, what we will talk about on the show on Monday, as you will see, is brain science and how the brain actually functions holographically. And this allows him to convert 2D to 3D without complete information. The brain fills in what's missing much better than any algorithm can do.
Have you seen this in action?
I haven't. I haven't seen his technology in action yet. I'm really looking forward to it. But man, he knows his stuff about brain science backwards and forwards. It's quite amazing.
That's Monday, 1 p.m. Pacific.
Monday, yep, exactly.
4 p.m.
Right.
Eastern, 2000 UTC on twit.tv. So we were doing your mini review. You switched from Dish to DirecTV. And
right.
We mentioned, some of the little features. And I have to say, I getting a TiVo to me is a big... my first TiVo was a DirecTV TiVo, and I love it. Mm-hmm. I miss it.
And I love that interface.
Oh,
but
it's the
best. The real question is, how about picture quality?
Right.
And I have to tell you that DirecTV is not as good as Dish.
Ah.
And I'm really bummed about that.
That hurts.
At least from what I've seen so far, it really hurts.
Yeah.
Noticeably
not as good?
Well, generally speaking, they're about the same. But I get more... There are moments when the picture gets very pixelated, which is a compression artifact. And so I suspect that DirecTV is compressing their video more than Dish is. Because I never saw that on Dish. And I had Dish for years. Also, it cuts out once in a while. I mean, even the closing ceremonies just cut right out. And I don't know if that happened on... If that was the original feed and everybody had that problem, or if it was just DirecTV, I don't know. but I do notice pixelation. In particular, commercials on Fox. So if you're watching Fox TV, and the only reason I watch Fox TV is for The Simpsons and Futurama, but the commercials, they're very, very jaggy. It almost looks like the two interlaced fields, and Fox isn't even an interlaced channel. They broadcast at 720p, but it looks like the image has broken up into two interlaced fields, and you see these terrible jaggies all over the place, but only in the Fox commercials, and I don't know what that's about either. But generally speaking, the picture quality is fine, except for once in a while you get this pixelation for a minute, and it kind of bugs me, being a perfectionist, a video perfectionist. What can I say? Dish Network, I never saw that problem. So,
now, I suppose it could be antenna or dish placement or things in the. I mean, there's other complications, but I wonder if they're compressing more than they need to.
I think they are.
Yeah.
I need to somehow find a way to measure the compression.
Right.
And see. I need to get Dish TV back. Another reason I switched is that Dish TV, my DVR, the hard disk, crashed, and I tried to get it fixed, and the Dish Network customer service was pretty poor.
So yeah, somebody in the chat room was just saying how bad DirecTV's customer service
I've heard that too. You know?
So you're not paying a whole lot. I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. Yeah. That's something we can work on in every arena, every company.
Exactly right.
I don't know why customer service just got so bad. Scott Wilkinson, he is our home theater geek, joins us every week at this time to talk home theater. And, of course, don't forget the Home Theater Geeks podcast and live broadcast. You can listen after the fact. We always have audio and video available after the fact at twit.tv/HTG. Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure, Leo.
Take care. Have fun in Palm Springs. There's a hot, hot weather in Palm. Dwayne's coming up. I don't know. Dwayne, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Dwayne.
Wow, Leo, wonderful to speak with you.
Thanks for calling.
I'm not even a tech guy. I just like listening to you on Saturday mornings.
Good. I'm glad you do. Thank you.
And my wonderful wife, my better half, anytime I get frustrated, she always says, call Leo, and I never do. But this morning she said, call him. And pregnant, she said, I'll watch all five kids and you can hang out in the bedroom as long as it takes to get a hold of him.
That's a good reason to call. Well, what can I do for you?
Well, I'm a full-time college professor with a related small business. That's and I great. Need something mobile and reliable for accessing my online classrooms, Facebook and email, editing written works, managing my website, and then finally watching TV if possible. Specifically, I need it for the upcoming presidential debates and speeches, and this is keeping in mind I don't have TV in my house.
Okay. But do you have a decent, I presume when you say watch TV, you mean via the over-the-air television. And do you have a decent signal, Dwayne? I mean, you're in Los Angeles. I presume that you've got it.
I do.
Yeah.
I do, but I chose not to have TV in my house.
With five kids, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
We didn't have TV when the kids were little, and I think it made a big difference in their interest in reading and doing other things.
Exactly.
Yeah, it can just really suck them in. So any laptop will do what you want to do. And I presume you mean laptop. Are you looking at tablets?
Well, I just a couple weeks ago, I heard you just raving about the Nexus 7.
Yeah, but it won't do the TV element.
Okay.
So really, until we get this Aereo service, which I think is coming soon, but... And that uses an iPad. But until then, if you want to watch over-the-air television, you pretty much have to get a computer.
Okay. Well, so I do have a nice laptop, so I should be able to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. You're gonna get if you Google Win TV, for instance, it'll take Win TV, one word. It'll take you to a site that has such poor spelling. I always just say search for Win TV. The company's called Hapag. HAUPPAUG. It's a town in Long Island. But they make a hybrid TV stick. It's a USB stick. Actually, make a number of devices that do this, that plug in to the USB port on your laptop and then plug into an antenna. And will essentially turn your laptop into a TV. They even come with software for DVR and so forth. I think it's...
Do I pay a monthly service?
Nope.
Or?
Nope, because you're getting over-the-air TV. You're just buying, really what you're doing is buying the hardware that connects your laptop to an antenna. And that's all you need. So they make a number of these devices. This one has a coax connector, but it will receive over-the-air TV, both ATSC, which is the digital, and I presume analog signals as well. It's not very expensive. I think it's under $100. This will do exactly what you want. And the rest of it, of course, your laptop's capable of doing just fine. Hey, Dwayne, thanks for the call. Good back to the kids now. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'll let him figure out the antenna part. A lot of these guys come with a little extender antenna. No C-SPAN. I don't
Folks,
think
have
cares
you heard about ESET's cybersecurity for the Mac yet?
The networks.
That world famous
Scott stuck around.
Protection I've been talking about.
I did. I thought maybe who knows if I can help.
Well, yeah. In fact, that would be a good one. But I think that one's pretty straightforward. Yeah.
No. You got it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Hey, thanks, Scott.
Hey, my pleasure, Leo. Again, I won't be here next Saturday.
Got it.
Home Theater Geeks will be on Monday and the following Monday. I'll have Mark Waldrop on just for your information from AIX
good.
Records.
So. Oh, yeah, Mark's great. Oh, good.
He's fun. Great.
All right.
Definitely. Okay, cool, man.
Thank you,
thanks.
Sir. All righty. Bye-bye.
Alongside its renowned.
Now, this, you could edit out because I'm going to disappear briefly. So here's a note to Josh or Alex. You may edit this portion out.
And don't forget to like he said.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. It's time to talk about, let me think. Oh, tech. Yeah, computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, all that jazz. Windows 8. This, you know, Windows only comes out every 4 or 5 years. This is a big deal, right? I don't know why I can't get people more excited about Windows 8. So, Microsoft has shipped the bits, as they say, for Windows 8. Initially, the people who got Windows 8 are mostly developers. But there is a free trial for you if you'd like to try it out yourself. But the version that developers got doesn't expire. Your free trial expires in 90 days. And one thing I really want to emphasize is it doesn't appear that there will be any upgrade or ability to turn it on, to enter a license key. When that 90 days is over, it's over, and you'll have to start over again with a purchased copy of Windows 8. But if you want to take a look at it, this is a chance to do it. Windows 8 Enterprise is available for a 90-day free trial. If you search for Windows 8 evaluation, and then make sure when you go to a site that for a Windows 8 evaluation that the site is at Microsoft.com, because I don't want you to get a fake, virus-laden pretend one. Go to Microsoft.com. It's a long URL. It's msdn.microsoft.com. Eval Center. It's for developers, they say, and IT professionals interested in trying Windows 8 on behalf of their organization. But that doesn't mean you can't do it. I just wouldn't put it on your main machine and understand that after 3 months, you're going to have to start fresh. Either buy a copy of Windows 8 or go back to Windows 7. But you'll have to, format the drive. They suggest that you install it on a separate hard drive or partition so that you can keep your original Windows installed, because you will not be able to upgrade or revert. You'll have to do a clean install on that. What is different? What is new? We've seen Windows 8. The pre-release version's been out for some time. They called it the consumer preview. It's very similar, although there are some cosmetic changes. It is a really... I'll tell you, a really interesting bet from Microsoft. They are perhaps taking the biggest risk they've ever taken. It's the biggest change in Windows that I can remember. I mean, this is so different looking. It's got this new tiled interface, colorful square tiles with apps in them, and then they're kind of live. If you ever looked at Windows Phone 7, it looks like that. The People app, for instance, has pictures of people that you know. Pictures app rotates through some of your pictures, things like that. My friend Paul Thurrott, who covers Windows, and that's all he does. He is the author of the Super Site for Windows, Win Super Site. He's been covering Windows for years. I was talking with him this week on our Windows podcast, Windows Weekly, and he said, you know, I think after really considering this, what Microsoft is saying is, in effect, the desktop is not really it anymore, that the tablet is what it's all about, that the Surface tablet that we demonstrated last month and will be shipping in a month or two, that is the future of Windows. I know this is a shocker because, you know, traditionally, Windows is a business operating system, and businesses do not want to run on tablets. And I asked him that, and he said, well, but what's happened in the computer business is that, well, there's been a huge shift. Used to be you wanted to be Microsoft because, and this, you know, if you just think about it, it kind of makes sense. Microsoft has a product that costs them nothing to make. There's no pieces of metal. There's no hard drives. It's once they do the invention, once they write the code, once they, as they have done now with Windows 8, publish it, it's all gravy. There's very little cost, maybe a few cents in download fees, but there's very little cost. It's all profit. And we used to say, who's, you know, when we talk about profitability, that you'd rather be Microsoft than Dell or even Apple, that you'd rather be just selling software because it's all profit. But something changed, and Apple really is what changed it. Apple proved that, in fact, there's more profit in hardware than there is in software. It's okay that they have to buy metal and manufacture and have inventory. If it's handled properly, it's still more profitable. And I think this is what's happened, is that Microsoft's been looking at Apple and seeing how Apple's revenues and profits have increased compared to Microsoft's, and realized that the future is not selling expensive software on cheap hardware, but giving away software or cheap apps, cheap software on expensive hardware, that there's more money to be made. And Microsoft has been looking at Apple and watching and realized that the world has changed. And I think that this is Paul's position, and I think he's probably right, that what Windows 8 really is an announcement from Microsoft that everything has changed, everything is different. It's a tablet world. It's a post-PC world, and that's what Windows 8 is aimed at. He says Windows 8 on a desktop computer, and I have to agree with him, isn't where Microsoft's going. They're going to Windows 8 on a tablet. That's the future. Very interesting, very risky, very gutsy. You got to admire them. A lot of companies, I'd include IBM in this, just kind of say, yeah, well, that's what we do, and they go down, they go down with the ship. Time just passes, and they're no longer important or relevant. It's happened over and over again in every industry, but especially in technology. Microsoft's saying, no, we're not going down without a fight. We're going kicking and screaming. We want to continue to be an important, innovative, dominant company in the technology realm. And Windows 8 is a shocker. It really is. 8888 Ask Leo. It is something I have never seen a computer company make such a big shift in their strategy. It's just fascinating. And you kind of admire them for doing it, but we'll have to wait and see whether it's going to be a success. Scott is in Canoga Park. Hey, Scott. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I was calling because I just recently bought a 2006 Ford Mustang, and it has a Pioneer Stereo System screen on it, but it's about 4 years old, and I'd like to upgrade it with GPS capability, and maybe it interfaces with a radar detector, and I have a Droid X
but I'm looking to upgrade that to a Samsung S3. So I'm looking for like Pioneer or Kenwood.
Yeah, you want Bluetooth capability so that you can play your music from your phone, among other things. Yeah, I mean, there are a number of head ends out there. It's a shame because, you know, Ford has a pretty good system of its own, the Ford Sync and the My Ford Touch, but they don't make it possible to install it aftermarket. It's only on new Ford vehicles. I have a 2010 Mustang, and I love the Ford Sync. So, head ends are a very specialized area. Alpine, I know, has for years had kind of the state-of-the-art technology. I certainly would look at an Alpine. But these days, almost everybody, including the ones you mentioned, have Bluetooth. So what I would say you want is something called A2DP Bluetooth. That's the stereo Bluetooth. It allows you, when you get in the car, to bond, to pair your S3, your new phone, with the car's stereo system so that when you get in the car, you can automatically play whatever's on your phone. By the way, huge, because not only can you play back the music on your phone, you can play things like Pandora, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio. Suddenly, your stereo can play anything. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Believe it or not, the most valuable part. So I'm going to actually, I was thinking I should put, this would be a good opportunity to put Windows 8 on this machine. I put it on the Retina. That was very interesting. It works. It works very well. It's a little high res, and I don't think there's any way to change. You know, in the older versions of Windows, you can change the DPI to make it high DPI, in effect. And there doesn't seem to be a way to do that in Windows 8. It's kind of weird. No, it doesn't boot to desktop. You can't boot to desktop. You have to boot to the start page. In fact, they've even announced, Microsoft has even said, we are not going to make boot to desktop available. So I have this USB key with Windows 8 Pro RTM on it. The way you do do it on a Mac, let's just put it on the desktop there. So you download from Apple this support software stuff that you then put on the USB key, because that's the Mac-specific drivers. So, yeah, but Web 9200, anybody who's doing boot camp always does that. It's part of the boot camp setup, is you get the latest support drivers. So what the boot camp assistant does, is it looks at your hardware, your Macintosh hardware, and says, oh, well, he needs this, and you download a folder called Windows Support Software. And then you reboot, and it'll install Windows from the USB key, and then you run the support software in there. And it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. But I have to say, I don't think Windows 8 is designed for keyboard and mouse. It really is just top of your business, then keep your not good. It's really designed for a tablet. Right now, free at FreshBooks.com. Make sure you tell them. Okay? FreshBooks.com. It won't be free to try forever, but try it right now. FreshBooks.com. What's important is you could drop programs into your startup folder. I'm not sure what you mean. Oh, you mean to auto-start them? Do you want roasted or unroasted coffee beans, El Nejo? Because Sweet Maria's is very good for the green beans. In fact, I just bought some espresso cups from them. But they offer all the green coffees. Actually, they have roasted coffee, too. What you want is somebody that's roasting really fresh so that you get something that was roasted that day. Well, they have roasted, too. Sweet Maria is really good. I'm lucky I have a roaster next door to me. Petaluma Coffee Company. They roast every day. In fact, I got something yesterday because my... just trying out different beans. It's called Godfather's Roar. And it's really good. It's very dark. SweetMaria's.com is good. There's lots of places. If you want Hawaiian Kona, really good Kona, Peaberries, Peaberry. Can't remember the name of it. Is it Peaberry's Coffee? Yeah, Peaberry. Yeah. And they roast small batches. I think this is them. I bought some from them. They're really good. Really good. Oh, no, this is not it. It's in Hawaii. Gary Koffler turned me on to it. Maybe it was like, it was something weird. No, it was like Joe's Coffee or something. Oh, I can't remember the name. I have to find it. Here we go. Oh, it's in there. Talking about installing Windows 8, I put it on kind of crazy. Put it on a MacBook Pro with Retina display. I've got to change the DPI. Fortunately, we have somebody from Microsoft in our chat room who explained to me Windows key W. This launches this, I don't know what it launches. I guess this control panel display preferences, and you can get in there and do the DPI. One of the things I have a problem with on Windows 8, oh, by the way, Tech Guy Show, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. One of the problems I have with Windows 8 is everything's different. It's hard to find anything. And you even have to know secret, it almost feels like you have to know secret keystrokes and gestures to use it. It's going to be very interesting to see how this works. I have a feeling that I don't know. I'm very curious to see how people take to it. I'm sure they've got to be nervous in Redmond, the Microsoft guys. This is big. This is opening night. Paul in Arizona, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Paul.
Hello, Leo. This is pretty disturbing, the conversation I'm going to have with you about Apple. I've been an Apple user since January of 84, and think I've had probably every model that's come out, including the 20th anniversary. So it's been a long time. First of all, I'll ask the easy question. With Mountain Lion, the new operating software, I've heard rumors that it's only usable with 2011 Macs and newer.
No, that's not quite true, but you do need, it is limited to newer Macs. That's true.
Okay, so the limitation is, like, I've got a 2009 big giant desktop model.
What I would do is I would look at the Mountain Lion compatibility charts from from Apple, and they will tell you which hardware is compatible with Lion. What, you have a Mac Pro?
No, it's the big desktop, the 26-inch
iMac.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So it's apple.com/OSX/specs, and it will tell you which hardware you can use it with. It's a 2009 iMac. What is the processor in there?
Yes, it is.
Is it Core 2?
It's an i3.
Oh, yeah, I should work with that fine.
And the other question regarding that is there any other reason for Mountain Lion that I should be jumping up and down about?
No, but the way Apple works is you always want to get the newest one. It's cheap for one thing. It's, what is it, $20?
Yeah.
And often they put features in there the developers start to write to, and it doesn't take too long before you kind of need that new version if you want to use software. You'll see more and more. It doesn't happen yet, but you'll see more and more apps say they need Mountain Lion. I don't think you will notice a big difference between Lion and, are you on Lion now?
Yeah.
I don't think you'll see a big difference, but most Mac users upgrade just because it's $20 and it's an easy thing to do.
That's true, and usually I wait for a little bit for the software that I use to catch up, because it's a business. They're all business computers that I have. And so rather than update on the day of and then in design.
Well, absolutely. In fact, my friend Alex Lindsay, who uses Macs for production and can't have anything go wrong, says he always waits not for the release of the OS or even for the first major update. He waits for the fix for the first major update. And he says by then they're usually pretty stable. So exactly. Not update 1, but update 1.1. That's the one you want to wait for. Right. I'm looking at the specs. It says your Mac can run Mountain Lion if it is a mid-2007 or later iMac. So you're golden.
I'm good. All right, well, here's the big issue. And maybe it's time to go to the dark side after I talk to you about this topic. I understand that on iDVD is no longer there.
Yeah, Apple stopped updating iDVD several years ago.
And they're getting rid of the optical drive on the...
You could still burn DVDs. They just don't have a standalone app for it. And they don't have optical drives on the laptops because they want them, or many of them, because they want to make them thinner. So the MacBook Retina doesn't have an optical drive, but you can buy a $100 SuperDrive external.
Right. So let's go back to the days when Apple came out with the first no floppy machine, and we all panic. Like, what do we do now? There's no floppies. And so one of the things that you always preach is backup, not only to Carbonite, which is what I do, but to external drives. And one of the comments you made one day for photos, to put your photos on a disk.
Yeah, that's, you know, to be honest, I don't really think that's a very good way to back up. It's slow, and disks decay imperceptibly, and you can't tell if they work or not unless you check them regularly. So, in fact, we're hearing lots of people having trouble with DVDs and CDs that they've made not working after a few years. So, frankly, I think the best kind of backup is to an external drive. It's so much faster. And then to the cloud, whether it's Carbonite or some other solution. That way you have three copies and two different places. You can back up to DVDs, but I honestly think that physical media is going away. Apple does this. This is one of Apple's both weaknesses and strengths. They dropped SCSI after spending a lot of time getting us all to buy SCSI hard drives. You've owned one long enough to know that. They moved to USB. They dropped floppies. Nobody's really missing floppies. They have not yet dropped CDs, although we're starting to hear rumors. And, you know, I don't trust any of these rumors. They're all made up. But we are hearing rumors that perhaps the new Mac Pros, when they come out in 2013, will not have physical drives. I can't imagine why they wouldn't. There's plenty of space on there. Right. Currently, all Mac Pros and iMacs have DVD super drives. They have DVD burners. Many of the MacBooks also continue to have super drives. It's just the Airs and the Retinas, the extra thin ones, that don't. And there's good reason for that. Why, you know, you're not going to be extra thin if you have a drive in there. You know, lots of Windows machines now, all these Ultrabooks are selling without physical media. Physical media is dying.
I think you mentioned, maybe it was last week, about the Acer, was one of the ones that you were telling someone about.
Yeah.
Very thin and very good.
Yeah, and no optical drive.
Yeah,
I actually have the Asus ZenBook. That's the one that I'll be reviewing soon, and it's beautiful. It's funny. It says inspired by Intel. What it really should say is inspired by Intel as a copy from the MacBook Air. I mean, that's what all Intel's doing with these Ultrabooks, is saying, hey, you know, these Airs are selling really well. Why don't we make Windows versions? And they're almost functionally identical.
And so that goes to the question, which version of a Mac operating system is Windows 8? And I'll leave you with that one.
I don't know. Windows 8 is very, very different. You know, one of the things we learned in the Samsung-Apple lawsuit this week is that Apple and Microsoft have a cross-licensing deal. You know, you haven't seen an Apple-Microsoft lawsuit in years because they've made deals where they license patents from one another. But this is what I found most interesting. And they have agreed not to copy one another. And knowing that, I think it explains why Windows Phone is so different. Windows Phone, with its tiled, slidey interface, is clearly nothing like an iPhone. It is a completely different user interface. And what's really interesting is that Windows 8 is based on Windows Phone. So Microsoft has really taken a new direction. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Everybody copies each other. And that's what we as users want. We want people to copy each other because we don't want just one company to have a good feature. Everybody should have it if it's a really good product. Hey, speaking about products, maybe it's time you're looking at the new phones, you're looking at the new iPads, you're thinking, I want to buy something new.
Can I tell you, you know, most of us, and I do this, just throw the old stuff in a drawer or put it, you know, one of these days, I'll do something with it. No, go to Gazelle, GAZELLE.com. Gazelle helps you get fast payment, fair prices, and free shipping for your old gadgets. You could choose from iPhones, Samsung, Nokia, BlackBerry cell phones, iPads, iPods, MacBooks, and Macs. When it's time to move on, visit Gazelle, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E. Let's say, well, you know, I think it's time to get ready for the new iPhone, right? So you got an iPhone 4S. Just, this is what I'm doing. I'm clicking. You click. It's just click the model number, AT&T, Sprint, Verizon. AT&T. Yeah. And is it 16 gigs, 32 gigs, 64? I have the 32. And then you click get an offer. Is it in good condition? Yeah. $300. Wow. So now you add it to a box. You can do this over and over again. They pay the postage on anything worth more than a buck. And then they send you a check. It's so sweet. Now, their data experts will go over the phone, and I hear frequently of them upgrading the offer. There's no reason they have to do this, but they do. They upgrade the offer if the phone's in better condition than you thought. They'll wipe it, too, so you don't have to worry about data on your devices. They take care of that. And then they send you a check, or they'll send you an Amazon gift card. Actually, do the Amazon gift card because you get an additional, I think, 5% bump on that. So get the offer. It's good for 30 days at gazelle.com. By the way, now's a good time to get the offer on the iPhone because when the new iPhone comes out, that price will go down. Prices always go down on technology, right? They never go up. So get the offer now. It's good for 30 days. And then when the new iPhone comes out, take advantage of it. Pop it in the box. Sell it. They'll even buy broken iPhones for cash. It's a risk-free offer. Good for 30 days. Gazelle pays the shipping. You get paid fast. Check PayPal, Amazon gift card, and you get an additional 5% with the Amazon gift card. Gazelle, they've paid almost $50 million to over 300,000 happy customers, including me. I want you to try it today. Gazelle.com. It's so nice to get rid of that stuff. It's just a good feeling. You're not clogging up the world. You know, I haven't installed Windows 8 in a virtual machine yet. What I do usually, and I'll do it on this machine, is install it in boot camp. That way, I have a full Windows machine. I can try it at full speed and everything. And then both Parallels and Fusion, I don't think VirtualBox does this, but both Parallels and Fusion, VMware Fusion, will use the install on the bootcamp partition, so you don't have to do a second install. So you get kind of virtualization plus standalone. So it's the best way to do it. No, there's no offer code for Gazelle. Just that's it. All right, what am I doing here? So the thing is, you have to get a different Windows support folder for every machine. Needs different drivers depending on the machine. So I've just downloaded the one for the iMac. You know what? I'm going to put this on a different key as well.
The continuing story of our band of heroes: Luke Skywalker, Princess Leia, Han Solo, C-3PO, R2-D2, Chewbacca, and
Carlos Spicy Wiener.
Carlos Spicy Wiener, here, go ahead.
And introducing Yoda.
Well, I'm not Yoda.
Alright, you gotta.
What is that from, Kyle Benham? That is weird.
You're gonna attack them? That's how you sound. You're gonna attack them?
Imagine listening to that all day.
Of heroes and villains.
I want the princess captured immediately.
Jeez, Gordon, maybe today wasn't the day to wear your mesh stormtrooper ship.
Kyle Benham, our musical director, you can find his playlist after the fact. After the damage is done on his Google Plus account, KYLEBENHAM, and of course on our page, TechEyeLabs.com. I was thinking maybe I should install Windows 8 on this machine during the show, just let you know how it's going. I should be able to do that in, it's very quick, maybe half an hour, not even that long. And you can do it too. You can download the evaluation edition and we can all compare notes on the new Windows 8 stuff
hardware will start coming out. And that's really how most Windows users upgrade, is with their next machine. I would recommend that. It'll start coming out, what is it, October? I can't remember the date anymore. October. I want to say October 21st. So the 21st or the 26th. I think maybe it's the 26th. But you, in this case, I think it's worth waiting for the hardware because, you know, this is such a touch-focused operating system. I would expect that a lot of these machines will have touch screens. And they'll also have new special Windows keys. The Windows key brings you to the start screen, but there's some of these new keyboards, including Microsoft keyboards, have a Charms key button, which would be great. So I have a feeling that Windows 8, you're going to want Windows 8 hardware. Not that it doesn't run just fine on anything that run Windows 7 or even Vista. It'll run better than 7 or Vista on anything like that. Back to the phones we go. Debbie is in San Diego. Hello, Debbie. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello?
Hello! Welcome to the show. What can I do for you, Debbie?
I bought a Mac Pro Plus in June and got a free upgrade for the operating system. No, whatever you call that
thing.
Yeah,
the operating system. Mountain Lion.
That's the one. And when I went to on the internet to update it, they denied the request saying that the serial number that I entered had already been taken, only it hadn't been. And I've been battling them for over 2 hours on the phone since then trying to get the thing cleared up. When I finally talked to customer relations, the guy there said that someone in Japan had taken my serial number along with a sequence of four other serial numbers that were right in the same order and used it to upgrade. And so they're trying to, this problem still hasn't been fixed, but what I'm wondering is if I'm going to have any security compromise long-term because of somebody having stolen my serial number.
Well, it depends on how they got it. If they're just guessing, and it sounds like they might be because they took a sequence of numbers, then you're fine. It's harmless. It's meaningless. If they got into your emails, because this is the way Apple let you know that you have an upgrade available is you register on the site. And then they send you an email. And the email has, right? You got the email, right?
I don't remember.
How did you get the serial number then?
Well, the serial number I got when I bought the computer, it was on my receipt.
For Mountain Lion.
Just the serial number for the computer. And
no,
then
that's
for
not
the
what
mountain-
that's actually not what you need. So you have to register so Maybe I'm surprised the Apple rep didn't tell you all this. You have to go to.
I emailed. I emailed the update, whatever it is. Mark, what did I email? Something like that.
There's a website you have to go to.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, you did do that. And that's where you found out that the serial number had already been used.
Right.
Got it. Yeah, so you couldn't get the email because it said, well, no, I'm not going to send you an email. Your number's already been used.
There you go.
So the question is where they got your serial number. I know there's no, I was worried that maybe what they had done is compromised your email and got your, they just made up your serial number. Yeah. It sounds like they just, it was a lucky strike. Now, why Apple didn't immediately send you an email saying, here's your copy of Mountain Lion is beyond me because that's just easy.
To them because they're still arguing with me, trying to verify that I really am who I am.
It's $20, Apple. Jeez,
huh?
Lou, it's $20, Apple. Come on, give the woman her upgrade. For crying out loud. Talk about penny wise and pound foolish.
Yeah.
That is just incredible. I am just stunned that they are being so silly about this.
Well,
especially since they know it was used in Japan. So it's obviously not you.
Yeah, and I mean, I swear to God, I've spent more than 2 hours, and it still isn't.
Well, okay, so now you've just valued your time at $10 an hour.
Like I'm going to get it from them?
No. If I were you, I would have spent the $20. In fact, that's what I did. I actually registered. So I bought a MacBook Pro with Retina display. I bought it within the time limit. So I went to the site, filled it out. Then the operating system comes out. Now, I cover this stuff. I need to use the operating system as quickly as possible. Apple delayed 3 or 4 days. Sending me the special key that I needed to download it. Well, by then I'd said it's $20. I'm buying the darn thing. I need to look at it. And so they got my money, and I can't understand why it took them 4 days. It's just an email.
That's not a bad idea. No, I'm more worried about the security being compromised.
No, you're safe on that. Okay. You're safe on that. There's nothing you can do with that serial number. It's not meaningful.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, Debbie. I'm sorry that happened. And Apple, really, come on. Just give her a free, give her the freaking copy of Mountain Lion. It's not the family jewels here. This is not golden. It's a $20 upgrade. For crying out loud, she just spent how many thousands of dollars on a Macintosh? And you're giving her a, well, we got to make sure it's you. You know, I bet if you went to the Apple store that you bought it from, they'd fix it. Now, you know, I'm looking at the serial numbers. They're not that hard to deduce. You can see what your serial number is. You know, this is partly is Apple's broken system, right? Because a serial number is not, you know, you could make up, if you know the format of a serial number, you could just try some until one worked. And if it worked, then you do the next one, and then the next one, and the next one. And some Japanese kid figured it out and got, you know, 5 copies of Mountain Lion. I don't think that that means this, that our caller, the Debbie, shouldn't get her own, get a copy. Come on, Apple. Just bring it to an Apple store. They'll look at it and they'll say, oh, yeah, you just bought it. You don't live in Japan. And I have to say, this is a broken system because the serial number is easy. You know, you can go to any Mac, do about this Mac, and you'll get the serial number. I won't show you mine because you could do the same thing, I guess. But you'll get the serial number. So somebody could have, you know, maybe she, I don't know, maybe some kid came in, maybe a student or somebody came in and said, what's the serial number? Sent it to his friend in Japan. I don't know. Maybe that's what Apple's thinking. Silly. There should be a better way to verify that you, in fact, all you should have to do is send them your sales slip, which they should have on file and say, look, see, I just bought a Mac. See that? See that? Can I have my copy, please? This whole serial number thing is nuts. Why do they even need that? Lisa, Costa Mesa, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
I'm fine. I've been a longtime listener. It's so nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
I have kind of an unusual question. I told the screener that.
Okay.
My question is kind of multifolded. Mm-hmm. My son is going away to college, and he reported on Thursday, and then he realized that Wednesday night someone had broken into his car and taken his laptop and his backpack and a few other things.
Oh.
So I know, isn't that terrible?
So sorry, Lisa.
Yeah, well, I was wondering if you know any companies that might be benevolent that might be willing to donate a computer, some that you thought might be really nice that I could maybe contact. And then once he gets a new laptop, how should he protect his laptop and his data? Like, I don't know. I've heard of some type of cables that you
can use. I'll talk about that in a second. Oh, I feel bad. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, there's lots of companies. You just call them up and give them a sob story. They'll give you a new laptop. Yeah, they're all. I can't tell you how many people tweet me now.
In IT, it's challenging.
Twitter's gotten a little annoying because people are constantly tweeting me saying, hey, can you retweet this?
Nowadays,
I need $1,000.
That's why you need Go to Assist.
It's like the new begging. That's really weird. I'll show you. I get these a lot. Please retweet my campaign. Here's a couple. And, you know, the problem is I don't have any way to validate whether this is true or not. And I get these so many of them. If I started retweeting all of these, it'd be all I'd be doing. Here's a good one from Danny. I just followed you. Retweet. Please help me get the word out. He's trying to raise money. GoFundMe.com. Basically, there's no explanation. He just says, I just need $1,000, so give me some money. And then he says, I don't understand it. I see other people doing this, and they're getting donations left and right. Why am I not getting any donations? Because you're a panhandler. You know, if you're a panhandler, you really shouldn't complain when people don't give you money. And you should be grateful when they do. And just that's it. That's right. That's all it is. And please don't ask me to retweet your begging. I'm not hard-hearted. But it's just that this is, I'm starting to get this every day on Twitter, is people asking me for something free. And I don't know who the, I don't know what the story is with this. I could use 1,000. Maybe he saw that I spent, Chris Marquardt! So at some point, if you want to take pictures of me working, just a few we could put on the webpage. Anytime. I'm on the break. Hey, we should probably do your photo segment live.
Early.
Yeah.
Whenever.
Where are you going to be tomorrow? Yeah. So we'll just do it today. Yeah. Anytime. I got another hour and 15 minutes. I don't know how we will do this because this is not really set up for the... Well, we have a hole in the desk for a mic. I think John can set it all up, or Alex can set it all up. It just requires a camera movement and stuff. Yeah, there is a company you can ask for a free laptop. Your insurance company. Is there a company that I can ask for a free laptop? But I get people think I have like, oh, can't you just call your friends at Apple or Acer and they'll just give me one, right? No, because I don't have friends at Apple or Acer or anywhere. Kyle, did you tweet this? What is this, Kyle? Is this you or is this a faker? Hey, Leo Laporte.
Hack my account?
We're on the radio live. Please retweet. Twice he tweeted it.
Well, I had to spell we're right.
Oh. Ah. Everybody should follow Kyle.
All right, live read here. Leo is for Nod 32.
I'm begging.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Lisa in Costa Mesa. Oh, I feel so bad. Her son went to college, and within days, his car got broken into, lost his laptop, his backpack, all sorts of stuff. Question one was, is there someone who will give me a free one? No, that would be the short answer to that one. I don't know of any company that gives away laptops. They're kind of expensive. Your insurance company be the first people to call. Now, you might say, well, we don't insure, but your homeowners may in fact cover such a loss. So I would certainly contact your homeowner's insurance. As for keeping this from happening again, well, make sure you have insurance because, frankly, if you have the laptop in a bag in a car, I don't see how you could prevent it from getting stolen. Sorry, I just got something in my throat. Sorry. I think that there, you know, the cable Lisa was talking about, these are called Kensington cables or Kensington lobs. Most laptops have a little tiny slot in the side of them. Sometimes it'll have a little lock logo on it. I'm looking at one of mine that has a little K on that, the signal. Kensington. You don't have to buy it from Kensington. It was just they who invented it. And then what happens is you can get a little cable that slots into there and can't be removed without a key or cord, you know, cable cutters. And it's actually fairly simple to, you know, it's not a super thick cable. It can't be. It would be impractical. So it's more of a deterrent. But if you, for instance, if your son's going to bring a laptop to the library and then he's got all his books and his laptop spread out and he wants to go to the bathroom, having a Kensington lock on there will at least keep somebody from just walking by and saying, oh, a laptop, putting it under his arm and walking out the door. It just slows them down, and that's probably all you need. There are solutions that you can put on laptops. In fact, there's one called LoJack for laptops. It works like LoJack, where it will phone home. In fact, Apple's now building this into its laptops, Find My Mac. And that I think that's a nice feature. There's a company called Orbicule that makes one that's quite good. It was the first I ever saw for the Macintosh. And there are a number of Windows companies, including LoJack for laptops, that do this. What they'll do is they'll phone home whenever they can get an internet signal. Sometimes some of them will take pictures through the camera. You can catch the person by having pictures of the person who stole the laptop. These are probably good things to do. It's certainly important to have backup so that if you do lose the laptop, at least you don't lose the data. I'd highly recommend that. And ideally, and this is why, you know, Carbonite, our sponsor, I talk about that all the time because that's the kind of backup. It's really great for a student. I put it on my daughter's laptop before she went to college because whenever she's near an access spot or in the dorm room, wherever their Wi-Fi or online, it's backing up. And it once it gets its first backup done, it's just doing very quickly updates anytime anything's changed. So that's a really good solution for just kind of, because kids aren't going to remember to back up. And then, you know, you can always send them an external drive and say, don't forget, son, every Sunday night, you call me, you get a pizza, you call me, and you back up your data, and they're not going to do any of that. So something automatic is a good idea. It's inevitable, frankly. Remember, 10-speed bikes used to be the thing that got stolen in college. Well, now what's the most valuable thing most college students have? It's their laptop. So they need to get very good about locking it up, paying attention, and they'll frankly still get stolen. It's pretty hard. I would contact your homeowner's policy, and if they didn't cover that theft, which they often do from a car, then make sure that your policy does going forward. It really is the best solution. Richard in Poway, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I have a question. First of all, you're my hero, and you've helped me so many times with silly questions.
Okay.
Especially with my cell phones.
Good.
My provider is Verizon. I have a Droid 3 dual core, whatever that means, cell phone.
Okay. It means it's more expensive. That's what it means.
Okay. Well, the salesman was suggesting that I go with the G4. And I wanted to ask your opinion. Should I upgrade from the G3 to the G4 system? If so, should I go with the Droid 4, or is there a better phone? Now, the reason I have the Droids, I like the slide-down keypad because my fingers are way too – I'm too clumsy using a touchscreen.
Yeah. So what he's talking about is something called LTE. It's actually 4G or 3G, and those stands for – the G stands for generation. So it's just the next generation of – data. It's for high-speed data. Now, the first thing to make sure is that the places you go with a phone, you even can get 4G. It's not everywhere. Verizon is pretty well spread out over the country. AT&T less so. Sprint really much less so. So you said it's a Verizon phone. So I'm sure you can get it anywhere in the Southland. And then it would just be if you travel or you spend time somewhere where there isn't 4G, that might make it less valuable.
Most of my travel. Southern California,
yeah.
And then the Seattle area of Washington.
Seattle both and L.A. both have LTE. And LTE can be very fast, faster than your home internet, but it also drains battery life. And if you don't use it, there's no point. So do you do a lot of data, phone data?
No. Usually when I go to lunch with a lunch group and we're having these conversations about anything – that's why I got in the first place.
Me too, because you look up, what movie was that? What was that Paul Newman movie where he eats the eggs? And you can look it up right there and then you answer the question.
I was so jealous that I had to go from my dumb phone to a smartphone for that reason.
That's exactly it. Yeah, that's what most of us do. What's the giant score? What's, just quick little hit. So really, LTE isn't going to benefit you much there.
The only thing that he teased me with is, when you're talking to someone, if you want to look up a contact in your phone or you want to actually go online, you can still carry on a conversation.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, that actually is legit, and that was a negative on Verizon's iPhone because the way AT&T worked, you could look at data and make it be at the same time as you're making a call. And Verizon, you couldn't until they went to LTE. I don't know how important that is either. You're on the phone. What are you looking up stuff for?
No, but I can't even, like a friend of mine, I was talking last week, and he says, he asked me for somebody else's phone number. I said, well, I have to hang up and call you back because I can't go to my contact list while I'm talking to him.
Well, so hang up. What? You can't go to your contact list? Yeah, you can. You just can't go online.
Pardon?
You can go to your contact list. You just can't go online. Now that's that's a pathetic phone if you can't look at your contacts while you're on a phone call.
I didn't figure out how to do it.
That has nothing to do with LTE. That has to do with just the design of the phone.
So should I or should I not do it?
It doesn't sound like you have a compelling reason to. Are you happy with your existing Droid?
The 3 is so much better than the 2 was. Yeah,
I agree. And what phone is he recommending now?
Well, he likes that Samsung for the 4G network, but it doesn't have the slide-out keyboard, so I was leaning towards...
No, don't say... Yeah, keep what you got.
Yeah.
Most of the phones are losing the slide-out keyboards, by the way. This is...
But I am so... You would laugh if you watched me trying to type on a screen.
Yeah. No, you're not alone. There are a lot of people who say, I need to have a physical keyboard.
I mean, I have a 10-inch tablet, a Toshiba tablet, and I have to use a little, whatever you call that thing, that looks like a pen.
My fingers, stylus. What do you have, really fat fingers?
Yes. No, they're not that.
I have fat fingers. I'm not mocking you. Believe me. I've got sausage fingers. I think the Droid 4, I don't wonder if he's recommending that, because the Droid 4, the next generation of Droid, has a slide-out keyboard.
Right. And he knows that I don't do well on a virtual.
So I'm surprised he's not recommending it.
Oh, he did. He said he showed me both. He showed me that Samsung.
I see.
4G and the Droid 4.
I love the Samsung, but I don't mind a on-screen keyboard. I just stay with what you have unless you feel like it's too slow.
No.
Battery life goes way down with LTE. It drains.
Oh, really?
Because it drains battery like crazy.
Oh, okay. Well, then maybe I want to stay because I'm very happy. I get a day. I get 2 days on my battery.
Yeah,
now.
Keep your phone.
You're my hero.
Yeah, I don't want you to spend any more money than you have to.
I had a dumb phone, and I wanted to get a phone that I could sync my Outlook calendar.
Good. Now, you know why the Verizon guy wants you to buy a new phone? Not because he wants to sell you the phone. That's not the issue. He wants you to re-up, because as soon as you put a new phone on there, you got another 2 years to go.
Right.
It's how he locks you in.
Yeah, but I've been with Verizon for probably 12 or 14 years.
Well, then you might not care. You know what? You could go back to him and say, I'll take a Droid 4 if you give it to me for $25.
No, he wants, with the tax and the $30 charge, it's $260.
Yeah, say, no, I'll do it, but you got to give me a better deal.
Okay, I'll try that.
He says, if you say, hey, I'll stick around for another 2 years if you give me a free phone.
I'll give it a shot. I got nothing to lose.
And if not, you're happy with your Droid 3. Stay with it, Richard. You know, people pay attention to the cost of the phone. The cost of the phone is nothing compared to the cost of the monthly service charge, which is going to be $2,000 to $2,500 over 2 years. That's what they want. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, we're going to bring in a new mic here so we can get Chris Marquardt on. Go right ahead.
Well,
while you're doing
Tech Guy
that,
Labs, we wanted to do is
I will talk about Ring Central. I love Ring Central. Well, this is our phone system. Do you ever use our phone system, Alex?
Actually, no.
He doesn't. He gets no calls because he's an engineer. This was the issue when we moved into the new studio. I said, do we need a phone system? Because we didn't, in the old cottage, you know, I didn't have very many employees, and I just said, use your phone. You can't do that anymore, by the way. The boss can't say, oh, just use your cell phone for company. So that wasn't going to work. That was not going to work. I knew we needed a phone system. And what I really didn't want to spend a lot of money up front on a big PBX in the basement and all this complexity and have to hire a consultant just to manage it. So we have a great IT guy. And he said, well, you know what I've done with a number of my clients? We've been very happy is we've used RingCentral, which is a cloud-based phone system. I said, all right, now you're talking. Tell me about it. No startup cost, zero. It starts at $20 per month per user, so it's very affordable. And by the way, they get long-distance service and stuff for free. You also get a lot of nice features. You get faxes in your inbox. You get voicemails in your inbox. What's really cool about RingCentral is I also can use my... They have RingCentral smartphone apps. I have one on my Android and one on my iPhone. And that becomes your business phone. So now instead of using the phone, the cell phone at home, I'll use RingCentral to make the call. So the company pays the charges. But it also appears as the company phone number via caller ID, which is really great. So I want you to try RingCentral. I think you will really like it. They have a 30-day no-risk trial. And just for you, just for our listeners, they're going to give you a two-for-one deal on the phone. You buy one desk phone, you get a second one free up to 20 phones. So that is a really good deal. That's actually about how many phones. We would have saved half on the phones. That is a good deal. So here's a number for you to call, 800-543-9980. Or you can also go to ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. 800-543-9980. Ring Central. We're a year in now, and I'm so glad I did this. This is the best phone system we've ever had. It is so sophisticated. And you know, if Alex doesn't use it, I unplug the phone, and it's fine. He still gets phones on his cell phone if he wants to, but he doesn't have to. It's so easy. RingCentral.com. You're gonna like it. 800-543-9980. Huh? If you were a sales guy, you'd need it. Lisa uses it all the time. We have an 800 number, too. And it's much more professional if you have, you give out an 800 number on the card. But the 800 number rings whatever phone I tell it to ring, including my cell phone, which is very slick. And then I have the fancy, whatever, Nortel conferencing thing. We got a Polycom in the conference room. All that stuff works just fine with RingCentral. All right, we're getting set up, and then we need a camera for him. Yes. Well, not now. I'll tell you what. Let's do it in half an hour. How about that? Give you some time.
You're tuned to Premier Channel 7.
Well, I'll show you. This is the crappy photo we're using. I mean, by the way, we should pay you for this. This isn't right. But we'll credit you. Okay. We'll credit you. So this is the one and only photo on here. I want rotating photos of me in my studio. With expressions and talking. Real photos of me actually working. And I wore a bright red shirt with says TWIT on it. There you go. But that's what this is for. It's for that.
You're tuned to Premier Channel 7. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
No.
Again at 6 minutes past the hour.
Makes me sound like a supermodel. If you would sit in that seat so we can aim the camera at you. Our website looks good. They're looking good. No, you have to take that light and aim it at him. It makes me a little bit darker, but it's not horrible. It should just rotate. Yeah.
This is Premier Channel 7.
Is it on him?
Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
He does look. You're wearing a black shirt. I guess that's fine. You look like a head floating in the. Oh yeah, pull the curtain behind him. That's what we do. Open that up, and there's a drop light on it. That actually should look a lot better. Just go all the way to the right. That's the main. Yeah, that's what you want. Yeah. Now it looks much better. Much more interesting. And you should tighten it just a little bit, just so we don't see this edge. He could be a little bit to the right of the screen. He doesn't have to be centered. Look at me and talk. Yeah, you're right. So make him on the left, actually. Yeah. All right, that's fine. No. Don't mess with that curtain. You messed it up. Move it to the right again. Thank you. That's good. Right there. Perfect. That's good. That's a great looking shot. How do you like that? You can see it over to your right, too, Chris. It looks good. Should he slide forward a little bit? Are you in the light? No, you're not in the light. Could you... It's brighter over there, see?
Oh, yeah.
Turn it so it's aimed at him. As bright as you can get him. There you go. That's good. Yeah, get this out. I don't want this in the shot. So zoom. Just zoom, that's all.
From Premier Radio Network.
That's fine. Tight's good. We want to see him, and I like the lamp over his shoulder. Yeah, that's good. Mmm. No, your cell minutes do, let's see. Yeah, I guess they do get used. But, yeah, thank you, Chris. But the RingCentral app doesn't use cell minutes. It uses data.
The Tech Guy will begin at 6 minutes past the hour from Premier Radio Networks.
A bizarre mountain lion story.
Actually, try. You could take the battery out of the Nexus 7. Easy. Just the screen, the back pops off just as it does on the most Android phones.
This is Premier Channel 7. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, will begin at...
We have a number of basement tours online. What's the zipper on my shoulder? That's where my special drugs go. Or my phone. I would wait for the Note 2 since it's going to be out in 10 days or 11 days and just see. I'm thinking I'm going to replace my S3 with a Note 2. I like a big screen.
You're tuned to
Premier, but I think between the two of those are excellent. Those are really excellent. Google Voice doesn't give you nearly the features that RingCentral does. RingCentral is really a business phone system. So, for instance, when you call our RingCentral number, you get a greeting, you get mailboxes, you get, you know, there's this whole system that you get that you just don't get on Google Voice. It's designed for a business. So, you know, press 1 for sales, press 2 for engineering, that kind of thing.
You're tuned to Premier Channel 7.
I use Google Voice personally. I love Google Voice. In fact, I have the Obi Hi in my phone. I don't have a landline in my apartment. I just have the Obi Hi in the Google Voice. I hear that, Terry H. Oh!
Hi, Terry H. See you later.
If you're that sensitive, you probably shouldn't be in here. Yeah, on live. That's so sad. Oh, I don't know. I have to change the channel. Well, a good day to you, Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. It's time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, digital photography. Actually, our digital photo guy's in studio with us today. So Chris Marquardt's going to do a Saturday photography segment in about half an hour, 33 after the hour. He's going to do a whole photo day. If you watch the Twitch stream, after the radio show is over, we're going to do photography for the rest of the day. So Chris has some guests booked in, and we're going to have a lot of fun. You got some? What are you going to be talking about? Something interesting? Well, I'll ask you in half an hour. When he's got a microphone, I'll ask him. But that should be fun. If you love digital photography, we love to talk digital photography. It's one of my favorite subjects. Sharon Hacienda Heights, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Sharon.
Hi, Leo. Nice to talk with you.
Well, nice to talk to you. Thanks for calling.
I have a question about my iPad 2.
Yes.
I tried to update it on my older computer to 5.0, and it told me to stop or else I would lose everything.
Right. So that's a scary message when you get that message.
Yes, yeah. It was. So I stopped. So I went to the Apple store where I bought it, and they said in order to save my photos that I could do one of two things, save my photos to iTunes, or do something called Dropbox, and then they would be able to update to the iCloud in 5.0.
Yeah, what the iTunes was telling you was, look, in order to upgrade your iPad, we have to erase it and start all over again. So make sure you have a backup. Whenever you're connecting your iPad, every time you connect it, iTunes goes chugga 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 and makes a backup, right?
I don't know because I don't connect to my computer because it's an old PC.
Ah, so you never do that?
No.
So it was good that you stopped because, if you don't have a backup. Now, most people, whenever they hook it up to their computer, they're backing up. And as long as you have a current backup, and by the way, the new iPads, you don't have this yet because you don't have the new iOS 5, but the new iPads will not only back up to the computer, and you'll like this, but they'll back up to iCloud all the time. So as long as you have a backup, no big deal. You just restore from your backup and you're good to go. However, since you haven't been doing that, it was good that you stopped because you would have lost the photos that are on there and so forth.
Right.
So, yeah. So the idea is we're going to have to hook up to a computer.
Okay.
And when we do, we're going to have to we're going to make a backup of the computer, and we probably it would behoove us to be extra careful, and because you have photos on there, you don't have copies of anywhere else, do you?
Some I do, but not all.
Yeah, well, we don't want to lose those.
That's right.
In fact, this is a good thing because you ran the risk of losing them anyway, so it's good that you didn't, and we're going to make up a backup now.
Okay.
So when you first connect it to iTunes, if you have, there are a number of different photo apps you can use that it will copy the photos to. I like Picasa, which is a free program from Google. Picasa will also allow you to share those photos onto the internet at Picasa Web. So if you have pictures of people that you want to share with them, that's a good way to do it. He mentioned Dropbox. Dropbox is only 2 gigabytes for free, but that might be enough for all your photos. Picasa gives you a little bit more. I think it's 7 gigabytes to start. And you can also back up to directly to your hard drive. I'm not familiar in Windows what the default photo program is. He said iTunes would do it.
He said I went to one of the one-on-one classes.
Yeah.
And he said iTunes would do it.
Okay. It will capture the camera roll. If you have photos in other locations, it won't capture those. I would say
I have them in other locations.
Yeah, yes. I would say your best bet is to hook it up to iTunes. Don't say, I want to upgrade yet. Say, back up.
I'll back up.
Back it up. And then now what you've done is you've created a single file with everything that's on your iPad.
Right.
That's the first thing to do. I still would pull off those photos so you can look at them and you have access to them. And you can do that with Picasa, which I like, P-I-C-A-S-A. You'll have to tell iTunes the first time, hey, when I connect the iPad, copy the photos to Picasa.
Okay.
And it will do that.
And it will do that.
Yeah. And then once you see all the photos, you look at Picasa, you see all your photos, right? They're copied. They're on the hard drive. You check the hard drive because I want to be doubly sure. You check and you make sure you got the full backup of your iPad. Then you can go ahead and say, yes, erase it. And let it erase.
Okay.
Okay. So download Picasa. I think that's the best way to do it.
Okay, super.
And make sure you have the updated iTunes as well. I think it probably already did that for you. It won't offer to back up to update the iPad unless you have the latest one.
Unless I have the latest one. So.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll give it a try. So it's the USB port and plug in the iPad to the computer.
Yeah, I know it's an old PC, but you need to do it somewhere. Yeah.
Somewhere.
Yep.
Yeah. All righty. Well, thank you so very, very much. I'm going to give it a shot.
All right, Sharon. Good luck. I know that's scary. It says we're going to erase everything, but they are. And so it's good that they said that, and it's good you said, oh, wait, hold on there, and you asked the genius. And the genius gave you the right advice. I don't think iTunes does it by itself. I think iTunes needs some help. There are Windows programs it could use, but I think iTunes on Windows needs something else for the photos. Yeah, do make sure you have the latest iTunes. You have there's an Apple updater in there. You can run that and make sure. I think you'll be good. I think you'll be golden. It's just scary. Matt in Los Angeles, tell me your tale of woe, my friend.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course. Thanks for calling.
We have it's a PC. It's a Dell. It's Vista 64.
Mm-hmm.
We're using Security Essentials. And then all of a sudden, every time you try to search and click a link, you get redirected to another site for ads.
Okay.
So I scanned with Security Essentials and found nothing. So I disabled that and I tried SpyBot.
Yeah.
Found one thing, but still there. I tried AdAware.
Yeah, both of those are way out of date, old, useless programs. That's the good old days.
I also tried the Nod 32.
That's good.
And it didn't stop it either.
So it sounds like you don't actually have malware on there. You have a browser hijacking object or browser helper object, BHO.
Okay.
Are you using Internet Explorer?
I tried that. It does it all in Chrome, Explorer.
Does it on all of your browsers?
Yes.
Interesting. Hold on, because we've got to take a break. Sounds like it's not a browser hijack, but something a little bit more sophisticated, but we'll tell you in a second. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Sounds like his host's file, perhaps, you think? Or DNS. Yeah. Maybe he's got DNS changer. Thing is, if it's you know, you would a malware program wouldn't detect anything if there's no malware on there. If something changed his DNS and then left, there's nothing to detect, right?
And still, they expect you to roll out new systems in no time, all on a decreasing budget. Well, if that sounds familiar, and I'm sure it does, listen up, because I have the solution that's going to make you a rock star.
Oh, they're out there. They're secret.
It's time to harness the power of the cloud with Vertacore, a leading cloud hosting provider.
So I'm wondering if his DNS probably got changed, maybe by, not by DNS changer, but something else. Could be a system-wide proxy setting. It's not system-wide. No, I think it's his DNS got changed. His hosts wouldn't do it on his host because he's got different browsers, and the homepage on all of them is the same. And no malware is detected by any of these things. What would you
recommend, chat room?
It's an interesting. The host file, though, doesn't change your start page. It just, you know, I guess if he had it set for the same start page on all those browsers first, that could have done it, right? Could just be a toolbar program, except it's for Internet Explorer, Chrome, and Firefox, he said, right? I think it's probably something. It's not malware, most likely. It's something that he ran that changed something, probably his DNS. Oh, you had some. So JEB says he had something installed on all three browsers. So that, what is it, a toolbar? That's interesting. So one thing I could recommend is OpenDNS. Maybe he should use OpenDNS. Could be the router. Oh, it could be the. That's a good point, Duck Feet. Duck Feet in our chat room says it could be the router that is compromised. OpenDNS is not crap, Arbiter. I'm surprised you say that. Malware bytes might. I'm not a big fan of malware bytes. Yeah, I don't think he has DNS changer anyway, because if he did, the DNS would not be working at this point. Could be the ISP is doing it. That's an interesting thought, huh? Isn't it? It's so complicated. There's so many different things it could be. Very interesting. I found it very interesting. Herbert the pervert could help him? I don't know. Let me see. I gotta. Well, if he's run all those. Duckfeet says malware bytes could help him. But if he's run all of those programs and none of them detect anything, then I don't think there's anything left on it. So, let's see here. Come on in, everybody. No, you don't have to crawl. Stand up. That's silly. What do you think? We're not crazy here. This isn't the zoo. All right. Here we go. If you put on the headphones, you'll hear what's happening. How did the Little League, who won the Petaluma Little, how'd the Little League go? Anybody know? Oh, Sunday. It could be me, the tech guy, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Big congratulations to our Petaluma Nationals Little League team in the World Series, a Little League World Series in Williamsport, PA. They won their first game. I think it's a double elimination tournament, so We'll be watching tomorrow and see how the Petalumans do. Yay, Petaluma! Meanwhile, we're talking to Matt. Interesting problem in Los Angeles. And during the break, Matt, I've been chatting back and forth with our chat room. So Matt, for some reason, his browsers, all three of them, Chrome, Firefox, and Internet Explorer, go to the wrong, is it the start page or is it any time you surf at all?
If you actually type in the URL, it'll go to that page. But if you like search and then the links come up, when you click a link, it'll then go to some other page.
Okay. Now, so that's interesting. And it's on all of your browsers.
Yeah.
And yet, you've tried three different anti-malware tools, including a very good one, our advertiser, ESET's online scanner, and none show any issues.
Well, it finds things, and it cleans it, and then...
And it's still there.
Yeah.
You know, scanners will find things like tracking cookies and stuff. So sometimes they find inconsequential errors. It sounds like they're not finding the right error.
Yeah.
So, and here's the thing. It might not even be on your computer anymore. So it could be that malware modified computer settings and then erased itself, which would be why no malware would find it, any malware would find it. Could also be, and this is even scarier, that the malware modified your router, not your computer. And that it's not on your computer, it's on the router. So what we want to look into, there's a couple of things we're kind of curious about I want to look into. One is, if your DNS was changed. You know, DNS is how we look up web pages. And it's possible to redirect to a malicious DNS server. Normally you'd use your internet service providers, but it's possible to redirect to a malicious one that would give you exactly this problem. So that could be it. So the first thing I want you to do is check your DNS settings on your computer and on your router. You can do that in the network settings on the computer. You could do that from the router's configuration interface on the web. And make sure that those... Now, I'm going to give you... You know, if you have your settings from your ISP, you could change it back to that if it's changed. I'd be curious about what those settings are. Oh, and if you don't want to do that, you could... Or at least you could test it by changing it to something like 8.8.8.8, which is Verizon's DNS settings. 8.48s with a dot in between each.
Okay,
48. Okay. By doing 8.8.8.8, you could at least see if that fixes the problem. And you'll need to do that on your router and on your computer. You might. I'm sorry, that's Google is 8. Not Verizon. Google is 8.8.8.8. And Google, by the way, provides this free DNS service to anybody, and it's very fast and very good.
Okay.
Yeah, 8.8.8.8. Now, if that fixes it, then we know what happened. Something, a toolbar perhaps, maybe malware, changed it. And now you fixed it, and you probably don't have anything still on your system.
Okay.
But if that doesn't fix it, then it's possible there's a toolbar object that is running that has been installed on all of your browsers. Sometimes those don't get flagged as malware because it just assumes, well, you installed this. This behavior must be something you wanted. That's
okay,
the tricky thing in the malware world is, well, how much of this is something somebody wants? So I don't think you should assume necessarily that you still have an infection. Some could just be settings have been messed up.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks for your advice.
You're welcome, Matt. That's an interesting one. It's tricky. There are other programs out there, you know, I'll just give you the list of programs. I don't generally recommend SpyBot anymore or Adaware. These are older programs that have not, I don't think, been kept up to date. You have one on your system that you could try, the Microsoft Malicious Removal Tool, or MRT. All Windows systems have it. And not only that, Microsoft updates it every month on the second Tuesday. They just don't let you know, and they don't even give you an interface to it. So what you have to do is click Start, Run, and enter MRT, three letters, MRT, Malicious Removal Tool, and hit return, and then do a thorough scan. That's not an antivirus. It's not as good as an antivirus, but it does detect common malware that Microsoft has determined is prevalent on PCs, and it will help you not only detect it but remove it. So, and that one you already got. I think ESET's online scanner is excellent. I think that's fine. People recommend programs like Malwarebytes. That's okay, malwarebytes.org. That's okay. Something else to try. Windows Defender might be a good one to take a look at. These are more up to date. He was running Microsoft Security Essentials. That's why I find this interesting, because in theory, that should have stopped any infection. Jonathan, Jacksonville, Florida. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. My situation is I went and downloaded the Windows 8. After I did that, none of my USB ports worked on it.
No.
And I don't have a Windows 7 recovery disk. It only had the Windows 7 recovery drive on it. But when I installed Windows 8, it erased that.
Oh, dear. Where did you get the Windows 8? Was it the consumer preview or the new eval version?
The preview.
Yeah. Well, you need drivers, and obviously it didn't install them. I'm not sure why it didn't install them. Those USB drivers are kind of automatic. Now, it was a consumer preview, which is not a final version.
Yeah.
You can download, if you Google Windows 8 evaluation, you can download the new release version of Windows 8. Maybe that would fix it.
All right. Thank you, sir. And as I said, I'm trying to figure it out. And
the other thing you could do is borrow somebody's Windows 7 disk.
That's what I'm about to say. Would Microsoft send me a recovery disk?
Sure, they would. Yeah. Who made the computer?
I don't know. It's in right now. I drive.
So the first person to call is the person that made the computer. Often,
yes,
often, if you buy a computer from Dell, HP, Toshiba, what we call an OEM, original equipment manufacturer, Microsoft will refer you to the OEM saying, no, we don't serve or support you. Your company, the company you bought it from, does. So call them. And in almost every case, they will send you the recovery disks for that model at a nominal fee, $10, thereabouts. And that is, I think, Jonathan, a word of warning for everybody. I mentioned this when I was saying you can now download an eval version of Windows 8. Be careful. Don't do it on a machine you want to do stuff with. If it doesn't work, you know, you want to be able to get back to where you were. And the new Windows 8 evaluation has no downgrade. No, you can't even buy Windows and put it on there. You have to start over. So be careful when you're doing these evaluations. They're really designed for developers and experts who understand what they're getting into. And you can get yourself into a little bit of trouble just doing that. Our website is techguylabs.com. I am very happy to say the new Tech Guy Labs is up. And if you hear me say something and you disagree, well, you go there and you make a comment in there and help us out. Make the page better. We appreciate it. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, coming up right after this. Where are you guys from? And you're on vacation?
Yes, we are.
Oh, nice of you to come visit.
Well, you know what? I had to come visit you. You have gotten me through so many long trips.
Are you Anthony?
I'm Anthony.
Nice to meet you, Anthony. You're dragging them along, huh? All right. So you're Ira?
I'm Ira.
And you must be Sosi and Noel. I got it all.
Look at that. Right
how about that? I just was guessing on Sosi and Noel. And that's how you say it, Sosi? That's cute. Is that a nickname or... Oh, it's a pretty name, Sosi. Do you like that name, Sosi? It's really cute. I like it, yeah. And Noel. Hello, Noel. How are you? You guys... How? Yeah, they call, and then we have somebody... Oh, you brought the view camera. Somebody in Los Angeles, actually, Sherman Oaks. We've got two people down there. We've got Kyle, and we've got Gina, and Gina answers the phone. And then this computer goes down to Sherman Oaks, and she'll put the name of the people, and then I just press a button to pick up the phone line. So they call the number, but it ends up down there. So that's kind of cool. So the people who run the show are not here. They're in L.A. And you're in the pharmaceutical biz.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's so funny. I've been with my current boss about 2 years now, and we were just talking about that. I said, I happened to listen to that.
Yeah. That guy's still around?
Yeah.
That dude, isn't he dead yet?
But he's from Texas, and evidently he's a big
fan. Oh, that's nice. Well, thanks to the internet, we're everywhere.
Yes.
You know? We are everywhere. So, Chris, you're going to show us that, huh?
Well, no, no, I'm just teasing. I'm just going to tease it. Well,
now, I have to figure out how to get this mic up.
Ooh, microphone. That would help.
I think it's no Skype. Yeah, no Skype. Go talk into it. Let me hear it.
1, 2, testing.
Yay.
Can you hear me?
Yay.
Good.
Can I see you and I can hear you and everything?
So are you set for 2 o'clock to hang out with me on the photo day?
Well, it'll be 2:15 because we're going to take a little break and let Dick do some stuff.
So I'm going to
show the view camera.
Look through that with you and do some show
fun.
After 2:15.
Fun. Still haven't done my Windows 8 install. Here, let's see. Okay. Where is the 2 gigabyte? There it is, flash memory. First thing I have to do is make this be a FAT32. Oh, it is. It's already a FAT32. Oh, good. All right. So now,
are you installing that on the Mac?
Yeah. I'm going to install on Bootcamp.
Oh, Bootcamp.
So now, where is it? There it is. Let's erase everything. And I'll put the Windows support disk on there. This is the disk that the Apple
made. For this short segment, I haven't really prepared a lot, so...
Well, let's just guess.
I was just gonna...
Oh, it's too small. It's more than 2 gigs? Come on. Really? More than 2 gigs? That's gigantic. No. Oh, I haven't erased it. That's why. All right, let's erase it. Maybe that'll fit now. Emptying the trash. Emptying the trash. So what camera are you on? You're on 4.
This one.
That one.
Is that okay? Microphone in the way?
I'm on 1. I'm on 1.
Hello.
You get errors? Undefined variables? Oh, Ryan. Oh, boy. We spent more than $100,000 on that site.
Which one?
The Tech I just don't want to do any more websites, period.
The Tech Guy Labs.
Yeah. Twit.tv was like 80 or 90.
Yeah, but I checked it out. It works. It looks very good. It's easy
I
to find stuff.
I thought it
looked
good.
And it's easy to find stuff.
This guy
stuff.
Says he's getting errors on it every time he uses it.
I mean, obviously, I searched myself first, and it brought up stuff.
Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Here he is. You know, normally he's in Germany, but Chris Marquardt is in studio with us today. Chris is our photo guy, the host of the Tips from the Top Floor podcast. How long have you been doing that?
Ooh, 7 years.
One of the original podcasts.
One of the early ones.
Yeah.
7 years.
Awesome.
Over 7 years. It's crazy. it's like 500 and something episodes
that's
now.
Great.
And
it's a great podcast. You do it in 2 languages. That's what's interesting.
Well, Tips from the Top Floor is in German. There's a second one in German. Oh, no. Tips from the Top Floor is in English.
Right.
And then there's a second one called Happy Shooting, which is in German.
Yeah.
And I do that one with a co-host. Tips from the Top Floor is just me answering questions. It's like the Tech Guy show for photography. You know, people call in and
that's awesome.
Leave questions and...
Digital photography has taken off, hasn't it?
Well, photography in general has taken off.
Because of digital photography.
Digital photography has changed the entire field. We're looking at the fastest learning curves that people can have now, because you have the constant feedback and you just iterate and it goes so fast and people get so good in such a short time, whereas before you had to
develop it, print it, look at it.
And even though I'm finding my way back to that.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Why is that? Because you're old-fashioned guy.
Yeah, I'm an old fart. Sometimes I feel like that. It takes out the... It takes out some of the guesswork or some of the variety, and that is, I think, in some cases a good thing. If you have a million choices that you can do after you took that shot, you will never really be happy with your choice. Now, if you shoot analog, that will put you into that frame of, I made a choice, there's a black and white film in there, and this is going to be a contrasty film. And
This is it. And this,
you can
and
do a
that's
bit
that's all
of that,
I can do.
You have a bit of choice in the development in these things, but in general, you put yourself into that situation, you have to deal with it, and in the end, you will be more happy with the results. So this is one of the reasons. The other is, it's just... It gives you a bit more time, you know? Instead of shooting like 5,000 pictures on a weekend, I might just do like 500 or maybe just 100. And in general, the keeper ratio in my analog photography tends to be much higher than on the digital side.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that sped up the improvement in photography is all of these online sites like Flickr, where you can take a picture, share it, people see it.
You know, how did you share things before the internet?
You had to give them a print.
You had to hand them out at family gatherings.
Right. And getting a critique was not easy. It's hard to critique people if they're standing right there saying, how do you like the picture?
Yeah.
So I think having an online site like Flickr.
Yeah, it's okay. It's good. It gets pictures in front of people. Everyone should do that. It doesn't matter what site. Get feedback, but be careful with how you judge that feedback, because a lot of the times people still want to be nice to you and they go, nice shot.
Nice shot.
That's not really helpful.
That's good.
Or
they're unnecessarily cruel. I mean, you can also see that on these online sites.
And that can happen too. So yeah. you have to be prepared for that.
Right.
But yes, it's good to get your photography out there. It's good to get feedback. It works really well if you give feedback.
Yeah.
Because then you also typically
you give
it's
what
a karma
you get.
Thing, you know?
Yeah,
you give something, you get something back.
Yeah.
The analog photography, by the way, also transitions very nicely into digital nowadays with scanning things.
So you brought with you, you're going to show us this a little bit later on. This is a silly camera. What is this? Is it a physical?
Mean baby here. Can we see that?
It's a view camera.
It is a view camera. We're going to look at that in... Let me see.
How big are the images on that thing? First of all, it's not digital. This is a film camera.
This is a film camera. This is still the transport state, so we'll unfold it later.
Yeah, it's all folded up. But how big is the...
This is about the size of the negative.
So it's about the size of a postcard.
It's four by five inches.
4 by 5. And that's the size of the negative.
The size of the negative. If this was digital, that would be the size of the sensor.
This would be pretty big.
There are only like one or two of these size sensors out there right now on the digital side.
Wow.
But... Now, you take a picture with that, it will take you a while. It will kind of force you to learn to look at photography from a very basic angle. And I find that this really translates well into the digital realm. So I changed my photography. I changed my digital photography by doing that. And once you scan one of those, even with a cheap flatbed scanner, you'll get like 200 megapixels.
Yeah, it's really looking good.
Easily.
Yeah, yeah.
So the depth of information, the amount of information in these pictures is just so mind-boggling. And there's something addictive about that, I must say. It's hard to go back.
On the other hand, there's the, you know, everybody's got a camera phone now.
On the other hand,
it's a little camera you got with you and a regular digital camera.
Yeah.
We are doing our photo assignment still.
It's still up. Ooh, what was it?
I don't remember. But you know how you find out very easily? You go to Flickr, FLICKR.com. That's the Yahoo photo sharing site that a lot of people use to get better at photography. And if you're not a member, just join. It's free to join. If you have a Yahoo account, you probably already have a membership. Then search for the Tech Guy group. Two words, Tech Guy. Our current assignment is Veggie.
Oh, right. Veggie.
Veggie. And so what you'll do is take a picture, tag it with the word veggie, upload it to Flickr. Actually, it's the other way around. Upload it to Flickr, then tag it with the word veggie. And then, there's already quite a few. This was a good choice. There's a lot of veggies already on here. Chris will pick, in a couple of weeks, Chris will pick three images to talk about. There's some beautiful ones here already.
I can see.
Look at the string beans. That's nice. And this is taken with a point and shoot, not a particularly fancy camera.
You know, 90% of how good a picture is in the photographer, not the camera.
Yeah.
If you get like the highest end DSLR with expensive lenses, and you tend to shoot boring pictures, then they will be really sharp and really colorful, but still very boring.
Yep.
You know.
So. Yep. Yep.
Gonna change lots.
So Chris, stick around. We're going to spend a few hours photo day after the radio show today. And if you're listening to the show, you can watch Photo Day on our podcast network or get it after the fact at twit.tv. ChrisMarquardt.com. We'll do a little view camera-ing.
Here we go.
Coming up in just a bit, the Gizwiz, Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer with a gadget of the week. But first, let's continue on with Stephen in Lake Arrowhead, California. Hi, Stephen. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I have an old copier that's dying, and I have an older HP 3600 and printer. I have a home office, and so rather than putting more money into my copier, I'm thinking maybe it's time to go for an all-in-one.
I think that's a good idea because most of the all-in-ones, that is the multifunction printers, have copying capability. In fact, if it's a color printer, chances are it has color copying as well, which is kind of nice. The only negative is if they tend not to be heavy duty. So if you're making a million copies, it might not be a good choice. But for occasional copying, it's fantastic.
Well, with the digital age and email, I find my copying needs are less than they used to, but they're still present.
What I use, and I really can safely recommend this, is the Epson Workforce printers. I have a Workforce Pro. They do really good scanning, copying, color and black and white, faxing if you want. Just spectacular all-in-one printers. I've been very happy. They have Wi-Fi. There is a whole range, so you can decide which one, what capabilities, how much you want to spend. The bigger ones have large paper bins that hold as much as two reams of paper, which, they're more for the bigger offices. They support Wi-Fi networking.
In at least a 500-sheet tray, but I'm also interested in 11 by 17.
You didn't say that. Yeah, most that takes you in another realm because that's not standard copying or standard printing.
It's not standard. That's really why I called.
Yeah. So you want an 11 by 17 multifunction.
I did find an Epson Workforce, the 7520 model.
Oh, and that's that size? Well, I would highly recommend them. I've been using them now for about a year, and I've been very, very happy. They're a sponsor. I should give you that heads up on that one. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's a very dark kind of a song. If you like the music, you hear it on the show, by the way. Or especially if you don't like the music, you hear it on the show, you can... You can blame Kyle Benham, my musical director. Kyle will post the playlist on our website, techguylabs.com, right after the end of the show. Time now, as always, at this time of the day, to say hello to my gadget guru, my own personal gadget savior, Mr. Dick DiVartolo. He's Mad Magazine's maddest writer, and for four decades now, he's been writing for that prestigious magazine. Prestigious magazine.
Prestigious. That's what we want to hear, yes.
But at the same time, he's just been kind of this nutty guy who's really interested in gadgets. And so we love having him on the show because he's always got crazy stuff. Guess what came, by the way, Dick?
Oh, my.
I am excited. My orbit.
Skating on.
My orbit wheels are here.
Skating on Thin Ice Tuesday.
Yeah. These, I don't think they're safe. I'm scared to death. These things,
we were counting on them not being safe.
I'm gonna review them on our show, the Gizwiz show.
Wait a minute. Wait, what does the word review mean?
Well, I'll wear them.
Sitting at a desk. And...
Yes. What do you think of these?
oh, nice.
They comes with a CD to show you how to. The idea is these are roller skates that will go in any direction, I guess. They're kind of intriguing. I don't know. They also look deadly dangerous. And
all right. Well, you know what? If they have a video of someone riding them,
yeah,
I'll accept that. If you think that
no, I'm going to ride them.
Yeah. Oh, okay, good. Okay.
I'm going to get something to pad myself.
No injury, Leo. I talked to the chat room and we decided just a hint of blood is enough. No, nothing has to be broken. So I did my own straw poll.
Yeah.
Leo should die. B, Leo should break something.
Yeah.
C, just shed blood. And okay. C, Leo, 87% of the people said just shed blood.
Oh, thank goodness.
Oh, yeah. They're in your corner.
Oh, what do you have for us? Probably not something quite so dangerous.
It's back to school. Yes. Back to school for kids. So we have something new for the younger set from iSafe. We did iSafe a couple of years ago. These are backpacks with a built-in alarm system.
Ah.
Now, the manufacturer warns that before you buy this for a child, you explain that it is an alarm safety system. It is not a toy. So basically, it's a backpack. The straps that go in front of you, one of the two straps has a little pin that you pull if you feel threatened. That sets off two alarms in the back of the backpack, heading out in two different directions. That sounds off 120 decibel alarm. And it also sets off a little series of five flashing LED lights so people can look toward the sound and then see exactly where the child who feels they are in danger
is. This is a good idea. This is a great idea.
Yeah, it's a great idea. Yeah. I mean, it's a good-looking backpack, comes in a lot of colors, under $50. You provide the two 9-volt batteries, and the company says with two fresh 9-volt batteries, the alarm will run for 2 hours. And there's even you have to read the instructions because it's put on in such a way that an intruder cannot run up and just rip it off you. So that's sort of an added safety thing that they're not going to take the backpack and run. It'll take them a minute to get it off, and they're not going to hang around with that much noise and the flashing LEDs. So the newest one for the younger kids is called iSafe Guardian, and they make them for older kids that have places where you can put iPods and your laptop computer. And they run all the way up to 90 to about $100. But it's a great idea, and it's iSafeBags.com is where they are.
iSafeBags.com, the backpack with a built-in audio and visual alarm.
Yes, that's kind of like the GizWiz.
Yeah. It's alarming.
It's alarming.
And it's an audio and visual.
Yeah, and we like LEDs. Do the states have LEDs?
No, but I could easily put some on.
Yeah, I think it needs a warning horn. Well, elderly gentlemen on runaway skates.
I don't know what possessed me to order these.
I think I can't wait for Tuesday.
Oh, Lord. I have to get Liz to order. You know, I realize I need some padding if I'm going to wear this. Well, yeah, first aid, too. We'll have a nurse in studio prepared. But I think I also want to get, you know, those inflatable sumo suits that they do for company picnics? I want to get one of them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Don't you have one from the last picnic?
Yeah, that way if I fall over, I just bounce.
Yeah, yeah, you just bounce up again. Leo, weigh your balls. One front and back.
I could do that. I sit on a yoga ball instead of an office chair. I could just strap these balls on my body.
All the way around.
I'd be like the Mars orbiter. It'd be great. I just bounce.
Yeah. Oh. I think this is perfect.
Oh. What could possibly go wrong?
It's a perfect plan.
If you want to know more about Dickie D and his gadgets and his Mad Magazine, you just go to gizwiz.biz. That's where you can play the What the Heck Is It contest, a chance for you to win an autographed copy of this month's Mad Magazine. You just have to guess what that gadget is. Guess right. You're in a pool of 12 correct answers. But if you guess wrong and you do so with cleverness, you have a chance of winning one of 24. Or stupidity. Yeah. So you have a better chance of winning if you're wrong, to be honest. Thanks, Dickie D.
Correct. Okay,
Stick around. Buddy. We'll do a short little segment after the radio show's over.
Yeah, I'm going to stay around.
Yep. Don't go anywhere. Greg and Whittier, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Greg.
Leo, how you doing, buddy?
I am well, sir. How are you?
Good, good. You always help me out with all my Apple products. Now I got another question.
Okay.
I'm moving into a new apartment today. I need a flat screen.
How big do you... Well, first of all, how far away from the screen will you be?
Probably a good 10 feet, 12 feet.
Okay. That means the farther back you get, of course, the bigger the screen you'll want for a immersive effect. It's funny because, you know, I remember when we got the first time we got a 32-inch television set that seemed huge to me. Now it would be considered a small, a flat screen.
A mini one. Looking for probably a 60 to 65, people have been telling me.
I agree. That would be a good size. I think that you probably, are you going to watch in the daylight or will you always have the room darkened to watch?
Well, we're right by the pool, so we have the sun coming right in. So
oh, yeah, you want to get an LCD then as opposed to a plasma. Plasmas are darker and more reflective. I think they give you a better, you know, like a home cinema effect. They look more like the movies, but they really don't do well in rooms that you cannot darken. So
and that's what everybody's telling me, and they've been recommending different brands like this. Somebody even telling me the Samsung Smart TV with the apps and so forth. I'm looking for a middle of the road. I don't want the most expensive TV in the world. I don't want the cheapest TV in the world.
You know what? I'm going to give you a value, a name that people, you know, people always mention Sony, Samsung, Panasonic, and they're all excellent. LG, very good. But, you know, there's kind of a second tier brand name that I think gives you great bang for the buck. It's Vizio. You've probably seen those in the big box stores. V-I-Z-I-O.
For sure. Yes. Definitely.
Yeah. They're a U.S. company that makes excellent flat panels and generally for a lower cost than their big name counterparts. So I think you could look at a Vizio 65 or even a 70 that would cost less than a 55 from, you know, Panasonic.
Now, do you recommend a model that might have smart apps on it? That
they all have smart apps. I would certainly get one that's internet connected and just look for an LED backlit LCD and then get the one that you can afford. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.